Ladies and gentlemen, the Michael Oldroyd Comedy Podcast is brought to you by Droid Entertainment. It is an independently produced show, and if you enjoy it, please subscribe. Feel free to write a review of the podcast on whatever platform you use to ingest podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Blueberry,
Spotify,
whatever it is. And if you already subscribe and you've already written a review and you still want to further support the cause, please consider becoming a sponsor through Patreon. If you go to patreon.com, you can check out our page. It's at www.patreon.com/thedroid. THEDROYD. And if you make a donation, then we will give you a shout out in a future episode of the podcast. And if you've done all of these things and you still want to help, then go ahead and just send me some nudes. All right?
Send me money, send me nudes. Don't be a Jew, don't be a prude. Send me money, send me nudes. Don't be a Jew, don't be a prude.
Yeah, I'm actually part Jewish. Now, enjoy today's episode.
As hilarious as that music may sound, it is not how I want to kick off my podcast.
Welcome to the Michael Oldroyd Comedy Podcast. It's going to be so much fun where he makes humor of himself and the many things in New York City. Oh, and by the way, this is not the voice of Bruno.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back, or welcome to the first time, to the Michael Oldroyd Comedy Podcast. This is episode 141, baby. That is 141 episodes in. Does that arouse you? Because it arouses me. Asexually, though. You know what I mean? Like, it's just a state of arousal, like in the psychological term arouse. You know, like, you know, when you're just happy or excited or whatever you want to call it. And I'm also excited because I have a special guest today, right? This is somebody that I've known, and we're going to just jump right into it. I've known him for years now in the New York comedy scene. We're going to get into our friendship, how we know each other, how we've worked together, why I always enjoy working with him. In fact, interesting fact, every single show that I can remember producing in New York City, I asked him first if he wanted to host the show. And when I say that, I'm not limiting him to hosting in any way. He does such a great job at hosting, and when he does spots, but I want a good host, right? Because a host is so important for carrying a show from beginning to end. So that's why I've always asked him to host, and I still would do the same to this day, even though I don't really produce anymore. But that's a little bit of tidbit that I'm going to use as I introduce him, and then we'll get into the rest later. But ladies and gentlemen, get excited, and please welcome my man, Mr. Chris Hamilton. What's up, Chris?
Hey, thank you. Thank you for having me. I loved your intro. That was amazing. I love that you was like, yeah, you guys aroused. Not in that kind of way. Like, platonically. Please just be aroused platonically. Thank you for having me. This is fun. It's a long time coming, so I'm glad I'm able to do this thing. And 141, you said?
Yeah, 141
Congratulations.
Episodes.
Congratulations. That's beautiful, man. That's awesome. Yeah.
No, thank you. And thanks for being on. I know we've talked about it for a while.
Yeah.
It's coordinating schedules, and it's always better to do it in person.
Right? Yes.
To do a podcast, because the sound is better than a call-in guest. So the fact that we're in the same city, we've run into each other a couple times over the last few weeks since I've been back in New York, and we're like, all right, we got to make this happen.
Yeah, we made it happen, man.
Here we are, man.
Yeah, that's it. Thank you for having me, and I appreciate the kind words you gave, too. I forget that when you host that there's so many duties and responsibilities in hosting, that when you said that, I was like, oh, thank you, man. I appreciate that, because I try. You know, that's what we can do. We can all try, so I appreciate that, buddy.
Yeah. No, 100%. It's a genuine compliment. It's the truth. I mean, anyone can say something, but I think I'm embodying that when I ask you, you know, to host, that it's like, dude, I like, that's the real compliment, is being asked, right?
Yeah,
Because the action of it, right? The action rather than just the words, so.
Yeah. Very true. But, no, I appreciate that, man.
Yeah.
I love seeing you perform too. So obviously, as to pay your comment back to you, your compliment back, you're very fucking hilarious, and that'll be the last curse, I hope.
Oh yeah, because we are. Yeah. Do you want to tell them where we are right now?
Oh, we're at my mom's place, guys. Yeah. We're at my mom's place, and there's a cross right in front of us, and there's a Martin Luther King not even a statue. It's just his face. So,
but with praying hands.
Yes, with praying hands. It looks like he's doing the praying. So, yeah.
It's the praying hands emoji, and it's separate from his face. It's three
emojis.
Yeah. So it's like, is it Martin Luther King's hands praying, or is it just the prayer hands as a whole?
Yeah.
Either way, it's awesome, right?
It's abstract art, man.
Nice symbolism. Three is actually a holy number, believe it or not.
Oh,
so there's
wow.
Three pieces of art, the Trinity.
That's so funny, because six isn't. So
you guys live on the sixth floor.
So too many threes is a bad thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's well, it depends on how you look at it.
I also don't believe in that number being a bad number, because that's in the Bible. That number is a page
in
the Bible.
You're darn right. Yeah.
If they really felt that way, they would have acted how the way hospitals act with 13. They were like, we gotta skip it.
you know? That's cool. That's actually that's a boss way of looking at it. You know
what I mean? Okay. Cool.
I like that. Yeah. That's you're not fazed by it. You know
at all, man. Yeah.
That's good. That's the way to be.
So, buddy, how have you
give it no power, is basically what you're saying.
You know what? I give it no power, but I know that people have given it power.
Yeah.
So I'm just aware of how people might feel about it. But I'll go, it doesn't affect me, but if it affects you, I won't say it around you. That's what I try to do. You
that's
know what
cool.
I
mean? See, that's called respect, too.
Yeah. R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
Something that a good host would do. You know?
I like that. I like how you got that in there. Yeah, that's nice. Oh, man, I appreciate that. I think you do. You have to, respect the audience, right?
100%, man. That's how I see it.
Yeah.
That's how I think that's big. That's very important.
I think the show you were, the last show we were at, you were there, what was that, Friday? Last Friday at the Lantern, formerly known as the Lantern?
I was there. I didn't see the show, but I saw you there.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that one was a very bad show, you guys. I was hosting the show, as usual. No, I'm joking. but I was hosting the show, and while I was talking to the audience for a bit and then started doing my bits, you know, it was a midnight show, and there were some people in the audience that already feeling the bubbly, you know, and one of the people was trying to guess my punchline, which is the worst thing you can do, because I have to say it. But if you're saying something over me and it's not the same, then you ruin the joke.
Because of the timing. Timing is so important. It's almost like if you're a biker, like BMX, right? Imagine you're getting up, you're like getting speed and you're about to hit the ramp. A heckler who does that is basically taking a big stick and just throwing it right into the spokes, right as you're about to hit the jump. You know, and you flip over the handlebars.
So how did you land that? Because you ruined it. It's momentum, man.
You are not adding to the show. Shut your mouth.
Respectively.
Yeah.
But that happened. And for me, I was like, oh, this show is going bad. This is not as good as it could be. Yeah. But more on me, because I'm the first comic up. I have to make sure they're enjoying themselves. I brought up the next comic.
Well, I am curious, though, before you say that.
Yeah.
How did you handle it, though? Like, once he did it once or twice, like, what was your way of trying to get him to stop without just saying, hey, shut up?
Yes. So I went, hey, shut up. No, I'm joking. what I did was I realized hecklers aren't prepared to talk. If you are willing to talk to a heckler, they're just going to say things that don't make sense normally.
Yeah.
And if they do make sense, then you just make fun of whatever they said because it's stupid. That's what you have to think. Yeah. That's what you have to think if they're heckling you.
Yeah.
And if they say things that don't make sense, you can kind of go, okay, well, you're not ready for this. And then you can use them as your sidekick. Or that's what I try to do. I'll go, hey, how about you help me with this show? Don't try to ruin it. Don't try to make it your thing. Help me with it, because I have comics I have to bring up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for him in particular, I was like, oh, it was him and a lady. He was with a lady. I think that was with his wife. So I started asking him questions. How long you guys been together? What are you guys doing? Giving them the idea that, oh, I'm the one with the mic. Let me do the talking.
Yeah.
And only talk if I'm talking to you.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll go into someone else and I'll come back to you.
Yeah.
So I was able to play that route. I forgot some of the jokes I did, but it was very stereotypical because it was a black guy with a white lady. So you guys get it. I would say the audience did enjoy it more than I expected them to. But at the beginning, I was like, oh, I'm not doing so well. Brought up a comic. The comic did well. Brought up another comic. The other comic did well. Everyone's doing well. It's a great show. I speak to one of the comics afterwards because she also had an issue with the people that were talking.
Same guy?
Yeah, same guy. Okay, okay. Yeah, but this time it was the girl for her. So the girl was being the problem.
Okay.
And she goes, ah, those people, they're kind of like interrupting me and, you know, I had to find a way. And I was like, yeah, I know, it's sad, but it's a midnight show. What do you expect? Yeah. And literally the guy was in the bathroom and he comes out. He goes, you guys are amazing. You guys are so funny. And we're just like, oh, yeah, we like you too now. like immediately. We thought he was, like, the worst person in the world. He didn't like our dreams. He was spitting on it. As soon as he complimented us, like, never mind. He's not that bad of a guy, actually. He might be my stepdad. You know what I mean? Like, he's going to be godfather of my kids, you know?
Did he hear you guys talking about him?
I don't think so. I don't think so. Because he was in the bathroom, and it was a whole bunch of people talking, and we just had our own personal conversation, where I think you couldn't hear us unless you were trying to focus on us, but you wouldn't know to focus on us. Because I didn't say no names, we didn't say how it looked.
Sure.
But after he did that, and once the show was over, then the lady came out, and she goes, you guys were phenomenal, we're going to come back here again. And for both of us, we're like, well, you didn't show that. You showed that you wanted to make the show about you, and maybe they did, and maybe we gave them a little bit of what they wanted without ruining the show and the integrity of the show. But after that, we had audience other than them come up to us and go, this was a good show. And especially for me, I was like, oh. And I was like, I think it's very nice if I feel like it's not a good show and someone comes up to me and says it was a great show, because I think there's a little bit of you being nice, but then also some level of honesty where you go, no, I really did enjoy myself. Yeah. And for me, I go, I'll take that. I can always take that. I also got paid, but I can also take a compliment, someone caring. I'm sorry, I feel like I'm talking
too much about that show. No, please do. This is your time. So I'm glad. I asked, and I want to know these things, and it's interesting. People are... They hear my voice all the time.
Someone's like,
they want variety. They're like, no, keep talking, Chris. Yeah. We don't want to hear any more of Mike, you know? We've had enough. Otherwise, we're going to find a new podcast. You know?
Okay. It's such an extreme thing. And they can do that. I know. But is that weird that people do that? Like, you go to a restaurant, I'll never come back here again. Yeah. Whatever, don't come back here. If someone goes, I'm never going to listen to this podcast, like, wait a minute, hold up. What did I do wrong?
So that's so cool. One of the things that I do, now we're kind of like swapping techniques in a way.
Yeah.
One of the things is I don't want to be a jerk. There's a difference between like putting the hammer down in a fun and funny way.
Yes.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Versus like, hey, shut up.
Yeah.
Like a confrontational, like, hey man, stop talking. Like that right there will like kill the vibe in the whole room.
Yeah.
Right? But what you can do it in a funny way where it's like, we're going back and forth. You ask them a question, they answer. And then you start doing your material, and then they yell something at you. Then I come back and I go, "Hey, conversation over, bro."
Yeah, like, good move. Like, very nice.
Hey, the audience laughs because they're like,
"Yeah, it's loosening up. Like, it breaks the ice." Yeah, no,
and it also politely lets them know, like, "Hey, you only talk when I talk to you."
Exactly.
You
know? Yes. Yes.
You only speak when I address.
Isn't that weird?
That's how we are. You.
Yeah, you are. You're the fucking king when you're on stage. That's who you are. You tell everyone what to do, and hopefully you're funny while you're doing it. That's all we can hope for. Yeah. That's all we want. Don't take this from us. What are you doing, heckling us here?
Yeah. That's fun, man. Well, that's a cool technique. And speaking of hosting, let's get into this, right? Because I know some people only like to host, some people like both, some people prefer to do spots. Like, what is your thought on all that? Like, do you prefer doing spots? Do you prefer to host? Do you care? What is stage time time to you?
Answer to if you feel like there's a thought you have in your head. But I feel that no one likes to host, but we enjoy hosting for our friends.
Okay.
That's fun.
Okay.
Because when you're doing a comedy set, you're working on something that you really never need to get good at.
When you're hosting.
Yeah. Okay. Because if you're hosting, you have to make sure that people are having a great time. You have to make sure that you're charismatic. You have to make sure you know the names. You have to make sure you get the credits right. You have to remember so much things. And then you have to remember doing your jokes, you know?
Right.
Hopefully your jokes land.
Yeah.
Hopefully your jokes are funny. Hopefully your jokes are lets the comics after you know what's planned. What the crowd is into. What do they like? Do they like being engaged with? Do they like talking about working, being married, sex, sexuality, race? Yeah. What do they like talking about? As a host, you have all these things you kind of like have to check off.
Yeah.
And then you don't have to do it all the time, obviously. But that's a sign of someone who's working and making sure that the person after them is, you know, going to do well.
Yeah.
Because if you do a joke that this next comic isn't going to touch on or is going to touch on, or maybe you're stepping over their jokes, whatever the jokes they might have, you might be ruining their set, you know?
Right, right.
So as a host, there's so much you have to be ready for.
Yeah.
And I think that's why we get paid more than when you just do a spot, because there's a lot of responsibility in it.
Right.
And if you say, hey, do you want to do all that? Do you want to have to make sure you get all these things right and bring up the people, make sure you got their names?
Yeah.
I think every comic will go, I don't want to. But I'll try. And I'll try and I'll try. So as a host, for me at least, it's one of those things I'm like, I'm willing to do it, but it's more of a duty now.
I see.
And it seems more like of an errand and work than it is just to have fun. I've seen comics go on stage and go, I have jokes in my head, but I'm probably not going to do it today. And they're having fun.
Yeah.
That person's having the most fun. If you look at, Ari Fuqua, who's very hilarious. You look at Aaron Berg, who doesn't do it anymore. Or say he said he's retired from hosting. But still, obviously, there's a paycheck, you'll do something like that. But if you look at how the way they work, and they're all very funny people, they're genuinely working. And they can't go, all right, well, I'm going to shit around in this.
You're serving the show, the crowd, the comics, essentially.
Yeah.
Versus, I'm not going to say serving yourself as a doing a spot, because you're not just serving yourself when you're doing a spot. But it's more, though. The tables are more turned, where it's a more selfless thing to do.
Yes.
If you're trying to be a good host.
Right? Yes. Yeah, yeah. This might be a horrible analogy, but maybe it might be a good one. We'll find out today.
Yeah.
I feel hosting is like being Kramer in the Seinfeld show. Like, Seinfeld's playing himself. The lady's playing herself, and whatever the other guy's name is with the glasses, he's playing himself.
Yeah.
The only one that's really acting is Kramer. He's the only one. Jerry! That's not who he really is. He's just pretending, and he's doing it to make sure everyone is doing well around him.
He's supporting the cast, essentially.
Yes.
He's a supportive actor.
Yeah. And then when you put him on stage for realsies, and someone interrupts him, he immediately goes, fuck you!
Speaking of not getting mad at the audience, taking it to an entirely different level.
Yes, yeah. It's because he has so much pent up. Sorry, that's what I'm trying to get at.
That was...
But I do enjoy hosting, but if I could work on my material, if I could work on just me being funnier... and still keeping that same charisma and charm that the people like as I host.
Yeah.
I'd much want that, because there's more... there's an reward behind that one. You know what I mean?
Doing a spot where you can still work on all those things.
Yes. I don't think this sounds bad, but there are comedians in New York City that have been hosting and they're known to be hosts. And... I would say kind of now they're slowly starting to get things. And that's not...
Give me an example. You don't have to mention names if you don't want to.
Okay, because I don't think it's a bad thing, and I actually enjoy this dude. He's very funny. He's hilarious. Mad Dog. Matt. James?
It's James Madden.
James Madden. Yeah, James Madden. Very funny dude. I find him very hilarious. And he's just now starting to host at the Cellar.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, he should have been beforehand.
Right.
And he should have been given more things. But the sad thing is... You kind of like sacrifice yourself for a bit just to help out those around you. And it's a very selfless thing. And the only thing that kind of comes your way is maybe a paycheck that's a significantly a little bit higher than the talent on the show.
Well,
you know?
First of all, no, thank you for sharing. And I don't produce shows anymore, but now that I know that, I'll remember to offer you a spot then.
Yeah, no, well, first off, if you offered me a spot, I'll take it. But if you offer me to host, I don't mind that either. For me, you're one of my friends. I know one of the people that you'll probably book are my friends. I get to play around more. That's what I meant when I was talking about if we are going to host, we could host for our friends. I usually like to host for people I know, because they understand that issue.
Yeah.
They understand that I can get away with trying newer material and get away with pushing the envelope. When I'm hosting for friends, because I know I'm not working too much. I won't mess up your name because I know your name.
There's a comfort zone.
Yeah, exactly. But if it's some Joe Schmo coming from California and I don't know them and I don't know the producer, and the producer's like, but you're a really good host, I'm like, thank you, but I don't know you, so now I have to remember your name, I have to remember the person's name, I have to get your credits right, and we have to have fun, hopefully, still, you know.
What about like at a comedy club, like
a comedy club is a great spot if they have like a house host, because they will know your name, they will know who you are, and you kind of do get away with a little bit more to mess around with the audience.
For example, the Lantern.
The Lantern's a great example. I would say The Pair is also there, too.
Oh, that's right. That's
New York Comedy Club, Stand Up and Why. But you definitely...
Do they give you hosting love?
Yeah, they do. They good. Do. All those good. Locations
good.
Do.
Which I'm really glad to hear that, man.
I'm happy about it. And
you deserve it.
Oh, you're too nice, buddy.
No, it's true, man. I'm glad to hear that those notches are transpiring.
Yes. And I realize they're happening, but I'm also competing against other people who also are hosts. And that's our business. That's our field. But if you're a comic who just wants to do a spot, you can get a spot next week. You can get a spot the day after. There's opportunities to get spots afterwards. But when it comes to hosting, you're competing against other hosts who have been either doing it longer than you or have a better, I don't want to say friendship with the producers, but there is a competition. And even though you might not want there to be a competition, that exists.
Yeah.
And they're picking over, all right, well, I guess a good example to make it sound like I'm not being toxic would be, by the way, earlier you go, oh, if I think of a good host, I'll think of you. Mm-hmm. And I go, that's wonderful. And now I have to look at another comic who might go, if I think of a good host, I think of you. I fucking think of Mike. I think of David. Like, you're thinking of all, okay, cool. Now you have to pick out of three people. But if those are, oh, yeah, no, that's fine. That's my phone. My phone turned on. but if you're doing spots, if you're looking for spots, I can give all three of you guys spots. I don't have to worry about the host.
There's more opportunities to give out spots and hosting spots. So there's a smaller window is essentially what you're saying.
Yes. There. Yeah. Yeah. And so it's not even it's a competition without even it trying to be a competition.
Yeah. Well, the cool thing is you, Chris Hamilton, you can do both though.
Yes. So appreciate that.
Even though it may seem like there's more competition for hosting, well, shoot, even if that hosting spot is taken because it's been given away to somebody's friend or for whatever reason, you're eligible for spots as well.
Yes,
so you can kind of bridge the best of both worlds.
Yeah, and that's what I'm trying to do. I feel like we got really deep on hosting.
That's great. I would love
people watching us make the sausage. Is that what they say?
Yeah, no, I think this is what we've talked about. I think will be interesting for both comics and people that just like comedy, right? Yeah. Who've been to shows and they're intrigued and curious. I would like to just share my perspective on hosting for a second, just
because
we're talking. you've been hosting. You're a much more seasoned host than I am, so I kind of have a different perspective on it because of how much I've done hosting versus how much you have. One thing I will say that I see in myself is, when someone asks me to host, like an open mic at a, maybe it may sound like a prestigious place or whatever, but whether it's an open mic or something or whatever, say like it's a comedy club that's well known and it's an open mic, what I hate is hosting where you do five up top and then you bring every other comedian up. It's like, come on.
You want to do the middles, too.
Yeah, yeah. Like, if I can't do middles, not to sound like an asshole. If I can't do middles, what the fuck? I'm sorry about the language.
No, you're fine, you're fine. It's like, Jesus is going to blame you, but I'm fine, you're fine. No, I'm joking with you.
But does that make sense? So it's like, I don't mind bringing someone up. Like, what I want is just the leverage to run a good show.
Yeah.
I want someone to say, Mike, host, and knock it out of the park as best as you can, so that I can pick and choose, like, okay, the energy needs to be brought up.
Yeah.
Because that last comic bombed.
Yes, yes.
I need to reset the room before I get someone up here. At least get them to refresh their palate.
What is that? Is that the conductor? The conductor?
Yeah.
The guy? Feel like that's what it is. You host at the beginning, you do, like, a few time up top, and then you bring someone up.
Yeah.
But you do time in between. I agree with that action. I also go, I'm only going to do something if someone really balls. Does well, I'm like, we're going to keep the show going. Yeah. You guys are having a great time. Here's the next guy.
Yeah.
But if someone goes up there and like, that's my life, and everyone's like,
yeah.
I go, okay. Okay, all right, I gotta go off. So I get that. I agree. Yeah. I agree with that too. Yeah.
No, that's a good point. That's a really good point, because if the momentum's already there, it's like, why?
Yeah, you don't want to slow it down, because that's the way you said earlier about the heckler putting a stick in the bike.
You don't want to do that to the show.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Because if it's going well, they're got it. We're all gonna and then, no wait, let me say one more thing. It's like, why? Just let it go. Yeah. No. I gotta say some stuff. Yeah.
Have you ever seen a host that will do time after the headliner?
Yes. That's urban shows for me, sir. Yeah. Yeah. So like I was saying, like, no, the show's over, sir. The headliner just went up. Okay. I hate when a host do like an hour, but they'll do like 15 up top, they'll do like 5 in the middle, and then like 10 randomly.
Yeah.
I'm like, what are you doing? Yeah. The show is becoming about you.
Yeah.
And at that point, I think what you do to the audience is you make them either love you or hate you.
Yeah.
To where if you do well at the beginning, off top, and then someone else is doing well, and you come back up and do more time, then your laughs can't be as big as the first time you up. Okay. Unless the person before you did really bad, that they're going to go, oh, wow, this guy's saving the show.
Yeah.
But if you go up and they love you, and then someone else goes up and they love that guy, and you go up again, it's like you're trying to fight for their love you already have.
Yeah.
So they're going to be like, ha, 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 we get it.
Yeah.
Get the show moving.
Because
they're also sitting there. They're watching it. So I think it's a double-edged sword.
No, that's a cool perspective. I like hearing your thought on that.
Okay.
That's cool. That's a good reminder to not be an asshole as a host and be selfish, right?
Yeah.
It makes sense that the actual philosophical breakdown as to why. How about crowd work, though, right? So that's an interesting topic. I feel like the host, as a comedian that sometimes hosts and does more spots, I enjoy crowd work regardless of whether I'm hosting or doing a spot. And I feel like there's times when crowd work is actually needed versus just, like, something that's, like, fun, right? Like, for me, not to give away all these secrets.
No, you know, give it away. Let them know.
But I feel like when the crowd is, like, cold, right, when they're kind of waiting, they're kind of like this.
Yeah.
I feel like, and you do, you know, you try some good material and it kind of, like, falls flat. It's like, all right, these guys need to be messed with a little bit, right? They need to be, you know, let's move some things around and dig up a few rocks here.
Yeah.
So that's when I know that crowd work and engagement and things like that can change the dynamic, or even heckling them sometimes. You know, like, look at this dude over here. He's not even looking at the show. You know, this dude's over here texting
on his phone.
His phone sound on. He's not even trying. It's like, dude, do you know where you are right now? And by the way, he's not even hearing me talking to him.
Paying attention. Yeah.
Everyone here is paying attention, and they know I'm talking to. Except
so they're all
dude,
laughing at that, and they start laughing at the guy.
Yeah. Yes. And then finally, he's like, "Oh, my bad."
I agree to that. I wanted to say this, and I'm not sure how weird this might sound, but I think the first 3 minutes of hosting is like a glorified check spot.
Okay.
Everyone's getting settled.
Yeah.
People are getting their drinks still. People are conversating.
In.
Yeah. Oh, okay, the show's about to start. Let's fucking get ready. Oh, it's your birthday. We came to say hi. Oh, he's talking. It's fine. We have a few. So what I usually try to do is I try to go, all right, I'll talk to you guys for a bit.
Yeah.
I'm going to have a little conversation with you.
Yeah.
And I feel if you are willing to interact with the audience immediately, even if that's not the person you're talking to at the beginning, everyone's going to start looking at you because they see that you're asking questions and talking to people now. One of the things we usually do, oh, you guys, a couple, how long have you guys been together?
Right.
There's always that second of before you answer, oh, this is how long we've been. And that's because they're slowly connecting the dots. Oh, I see what's going on. They're going to talk to me soon.
Yeah,
I got to get ready for this, you know?
Exactly.
And the sad thing is, when they're not ready, they're always a little bit late, and we always make fun of how long they are from going, you know, oh, he didn't even know you guys were together for six years or something like that. We always try to make fun of it immediately because they're all slowly registering, oh, he's going to start to talk to us.
Yeah.
That's how they start to focus. They start to listen, even if they're drunk, because the drunk person is like, oh, I can't wait for him to talk to me. And then you go, I'm not talking to you. Next. And then they're like, what the? Yeah, exactly. And they see it because they're in their head like, I can't wait for you. I want my time to talk.
Yeah.
I'm not giving it to you.
Yeah.
And we all do that. There's all different techniques behind it. But yeah, I think the host, we get to the hint of what the crowd is like, what the audience is going to be like. Sometimes they like material. Sometimes they like to be talked to. Sometimes they like in the moment stuff.
Yeah.
And as hosts, that's what we're kind of trying to do. At least that's what I try to do. I try to do like a sample plate. I want to give you a little bit of everything. I'll give you a joke, but I'm also going to talk to you for a bit. And if you say something random, I'll try to make something funny out of it. I'm going to play with all of it.
Yeah.
Just so whoever's after me goes, all right, I kind of get an idea of what I can get away with and what I won't be able to get away
with. I mean, dude, that is truly serving the show, man. A lot of people do not think... That's probably one of the reasons that I've always enjoyed having you on, is that you think in those types of terms, because...
Oh, you're too nice.
No, and I don't mean to keep... I don't mean to over...
No, I get you.
But it is true, though. Like, it's so important, and comedians don't always realize that. Hosts don't always realize that. And one thing that's tough is, as a comedian doing a spot, if you go up before the host has either truly warmed up the crowd, and sometimes it is tough to do, right? Like, it's not, sometimes it's just the crowd is not the type of crowd that's gonna
be receptive, you know, to jokes,
it's not like the host is responsible for everything. You know, like, there are things out of everyone's control at times. Every crowd's different, but for certain crowds, there are hosts that, I guess, aren't good enough. You know, everyone's working their way up, trying to get better, get more seasoned.
Yeah.
But you get on stage and you're like, all right, they're not ready for me.
Yeah.
Like I can't just go right into material as a comedian, because I kind of need to, doing this spot, whether I'm going first on the show or even third sometimes, you know, it's like the room wasn't reset and I can just feel that these guys need more
playing still there. With.
And, you know, like... or everyone bombed before me. Which happens sometimes.
Actually, that's my best spot. Okay, I love that spot.
Yeah? Because you have nothing to lose, and you're like, I'm only going
to... There's nothing to lose, but there's so much to gain. You can gain so much. Yeah. I would say any comic, when you watch, if it's five people in a row, bomb, and not bombing as in they're all doing bad, but they're all just not... They didn't break the audience yet.
Yeah.
And you go up there... For me, I go, I listen to what they have said. I listen to what they didn't say yet. Yeah. I'm looking at what they're doing, how much action they're putting into their act outs or words they're using, if they're using common phrases, if they're not using. I look at all those things. Wow. And as soon as I get up there, I go, I know exactly what I think should work. And I would say, so far, I haven't done bad. If there's been a bad show, if you put me on it, I guarantee you, it's going to be great.
Wow. That's legit, dude.
Yeah, but that's not a brag, though. It's more of like...
No, it's an honest statement.
It's like, I'm the guy who passes the test because I knew there was a curve. You know what I mean? Like, that's the only thing.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, I know I'm going to do better than me. It's, I genuinely go, I know what to look for because no one else was going for it. That's
And what I want to ask and dig into is, do you... always, that takes a lot of attention on your behalf as well. It takes a little extra work. What I'm trying to say is, a lot of people don't watch much of the show before them. Sometimes comedians will arrive just before their spot time, if the show permits it, or depending on what the show is. So what you're saying is, you'll take the time and energy, if you're not hosting, to watch the show before. Will you do that?
Yeah,
or
I won't watch the whole show, because I think it'll put me in a mindset where it's like, oh, I'm going to give up.
Yeah.
It's a defeatist attitude before I even get into it.
Yeah.
So I don't want to watch the whole show. But if a few of my friends are going up...
You might talk to them after they...
I might try to talk to them, ask them how their set was. But I also might just take a glimpse of what joke is they're doing. If I know the joke, and I know the joke usually works, and I know they're doing the right pacing, and the crowd is just not being receptive to it, I go, okay, I know there'll be something that'll make me realize what they might be missing. I'm not even sure that makes sense.
No, it does. It does. Okay. Yeah, okay. No, it does. And I try to do the same in some way, shape, or form.
Yes, as weird as it sounds, I want to tell a story about... the first time, and this is the highlight of my life.
Good.
When this lady revealed her breasts to us, as in the audience.
She just took them out.
She took them out, yeah. And it wasn't like I'm in the back, like, show me your boobs. It was like I watched the show. I'll say the name of the venue. It was Broadway Comedy Club.
Okay.
Great club. Go out to it, all right? Come and watch me perform. Show me your titties. It was a Tuesday night, and I remember the show being very, very boring and long. And not that the comics were bad. I knew a lot of the comics. I knew a lot of them were funny. So it was very weird to watch these people who paid money to see a show, and they were just like, nothing was hitting. Nothing was hitting. Nothing. I think that day I met Sharif Johnson, I think that's his last name.
Okay.
And very funny comic. He's won a comedy competition for Quay in the morning, so he's like a very funny dude. And he was one of the comics that was on the show. And this show was like, it was one of those nights where the audience just wasn't into it. It was very weird.
Yeah.
So I'm watching comic go up, take an L, or do a little bit well, but not good enough that the crowd is like, yeah, we fucking want more.
Yeah.
And I knew I was closing out the show. So I knew what was working for me was that all the comics already went up. I can go, hey, this is the best now, okay? Because you've already seen everyone else. I'm the last comic. Yeah. Either we're going to have a good time or not. But that's literally on you now because the show already happened.
Yeah.
And I knew how much time I was going to get. So I'm like, okay, cool. I see how the crowd is. I saw who went up. I know how much time I have. I'm going to be last. Okay, I can make something big out of it. So I go up on stage and... I start talking to them at the beginning, and usually when the crowd is kind of like weird, you guys aren't the best group of people ever, you know? And I shit on them a little bit, and then obviously they'll laugh a little bit because I'm poking at them.
Yeah.
I assume most comics usually poke at a bad audience when a joke doesn't land. They'll go, oh, well, that joke usually works. You guys are just being weird.
Yeah.
But if you go on stage and the first thing you say is you guys suck, they're like, what? You don't even know us yet.
Yeah.
Now they're working for me to like them.
Okay,
you know what I mean?
Look
not
at that.
For, yeah.
I see.
So
yeah.
I go, all right, cool. I do that. And I said after that, I go, look, I'll tell you a joke. Let's make a deal. Every time you guys laugh at the joke that I tell you, I will take off an article of clothing, is what I say to them.
Yeah.
And they seem interested again. They're like, okay, this show is kind of changing to a different direction. I'm down with this.
Yeah.
And I think I have my jacket on, I have my bag with me, my satchel. So I tell a joke, they laugh, take off my bag. Boom. Tell some more jokes, they laugh again, I take off my shoes. I tell another joke, I take off my jacket. Boom. At this point, the show is going so well, and it seems so different than what the show was originally, that I'm like, this is a good show now.
Yeah.
This is fun. This is amazing.
Yeah.
And then one audience member goes, hey. And I'm like, huh? And goes, you haven't taken off any other clothing.
Yeah.
And I'm,
basically, you kept on doing well.
Yes.
And she called you out for it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So I make fun of her for saying that. I call her a perv, obviously. I talk about how the way that they're not even here for a comedy show. They just want to see a stripper.
Yeah.
They start laughing at you things. And yes, they're tourists, so that's kind of also in their mind when you're outside.
They want to knock that off the bucket list while
they're
in New York. A two for one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I'm like, okay, look, I'm not going to take off anything else unless another guy in here takes off something with me.
Okay.
Being playful, having fun, hoping no guy would want to do that.
And of course, someone did.
There was, none of the guys wanted which was perfect.
Okay.
One of them was too old. There was another guy that I asked, and he was like, what was he? He doesn't speak English. So he was kind of like, ah? And I was like, no. And another guy was too much into it. So I said, definitely not.
Yeah.
But also, it's all just all playing into the bit that I'm doing. I'm creating this world. Like, all right, we're gonna get naked, but who else with me?
Yeah.
And then while I'm like, all right, well, I'm not going to do it, you guys. And they're like, come on. And it's such a different energy than how it was at the beginning that I remember reaching out to Sharif. That's why I remembered who the comic was. And I was like, oh, that audience changed completely as soon as I got up. And not to brag, but more like, oh, this is what I tried to do and it worked.
Yeah.
So there's a lady on the back right side, and she's with another lady. And she's like, she looks like she's in her 40s, but her titties look like they're 20. And she's like, you know, she made up her face.
What you're saying is she had some healthy mams.
Yes. And she goes, I go, well, I'm not doing unless someone else does it with me. And she goes, I'll do it. And the whole crowd looked behind. And she was gorgeous. She was gorgeous for a 40-year-old. I think 40-year-old women are very attractive. If you want to find me, just follow me on Instagram. Hamilton_for mayor. Okay.
By the way, I like how you leaned in and said that. Your entire voice changed. Like the whole...
Just in case you're out
let
there.
Let me know if anyone hits you up, by the way.
Yeah, I will. Gotcha, buddy. So she goes, I'll do it. And I'm like, cool, come up on stage. She gets on stage. I shit you not. She's already like trying to take her clothes off. I'm like, no, wait, we can't. That's too fast for them. You gotta give them, you gotta wait. Gotta give them, let the moment build up, you know?
Let it marinate,
yes.
Yeah.
So I go, no, let's talk for a bit. And I remember her name still. Yeah. I remember where she lived. Like, it's crazy. That's how much I remember this moment.
Wow.
But her name was Charlie. Her name was Charlie. She's from California. She said she's a divorcee. She has two kids, but they're back in California with her ex. And she came to New York City to just experience life.
Wow.
And I go,
wow.
Give it up for Charlie, everybody. She's like, experience life. Yeah. And they start clapping. And then I tell my last joke. They laugh at it. I think it would have been very hilarious if it bombed. I'm like, all right, show's over. You know.
Yeah.
But they laugh at it. And I go, all right, cool. Ready? Set. I look. She's already in her titties. And they are gorgeous.
Like, she was already had them out?
She took her shirt off
before
and her
sports bra. Before you did the last punchline?
No, I did the last punchline. And because they laughed, she just did it.
Oh,
it wasn't like I didn't even get to go, all right. This. Yeah. So she just did it. Like she was in so much. So she did it. And I'm like, oh. I go, all right. So we don't have to. I don't have to do it now. Right? And they laugh at that. I go, okay. I'll do it. I did it. And I'm
what did
looking.
You do? You took your shirt off?
Took my shirt off. Okay, yeah, okay, I took my shirt off. So we're both shirtless.
Yeah. Okay.
White girl, black guy. And, and the weird thing was I look and there's comics in the back and they're just filming it. And I'm like, ah, oh, this is not good.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then after that, I guess the producer plays, turns on, there's a disco ball up there. I didn't know that. Disco ball comes out, lights are beaming, and you can see them, and she starts playing Adele. And I'm with the mic still, obviously still in comedy mode. I'm like, do you want us to fuck? What do you guys want us to do now? Right? And like, the show's over. Go home.
Yeah,
but they're just like watching, like, nah, whatever happens, happens, bro. I'm not going to tell anybody, you know? So, like, I give the lady a hug, so I'm giving her this bare-chested hug, which I'm like, this might be too much. I don't know. Yeah. If I get canceled for that, that's not... No, she consented.
There's no canceling transpiring from this story.
Yeah. So I hug, and then she's like, oh, yeah, that was real fun. I was like, oh, I'm glad you had a good time. Good night, guys. Show's over. Bring up the host. The host closes out the show. And I go right back into who I am, and I just go on my phone and just look at my phone and just start texting. Charlie comes by me, and she goes, oh, that was real fun. I'm like, yeah, that was cool. Thank you for being there. And it's not that I'm trying to shush her away, but I'm more nervous. I did something like that on stage. I didn't expect that. My friends are showing me videos that they have, and I'm like, this is very weird, man.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, all right, cool. That was it. And for me, I go, that's something I love to do. That's something if I could have every spot go that way, I would. Okay,
wow.
That's why I try to talk about titties as much as I can because I want titties to come up every time now.
Has there ever would you use that buildup that you did again, or was it like a one time thing where it's so special in your mind? It was like that's a one time thing. I'll be creative in different ways.
Yeah,
but that thing I'm not going to do again because that was like. It was a one time. It was in the moment. It was
yes. I agree with a lot with that. I think that if I was to try to do that again and it didn't happen the way I wanted to, not only one would it bomb, but I think two it wouldn't be as special as the first time I did it anymore.
I understand that.
So I don't want to ruin that.
Yeah.
I'll try to come up with other creative ways to show titties. Yeah. But
I know the feeling, man. Of not wanting to like
taint what
ruin
you did,
a one time special in the moment.
Yeah.
Avenue that just. Unfolded and that you went down, right?
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
That's great, man.
Yeah,
that's
man.
That's an awesome
fun.
Story. Yeah, thank you for sharing.
No problem. I'm glad to get it recorded on something, so this is going to be nice.
Have you ever posted it?
I think I might have said I saw some titties, but I don't think I didn't post how crazy that environment
I feel
was.
Like that might... That's like a Reddit story.
Right?
Know? Like I feel like if, you know, if it were me, I'd be like, hey, buddy, can you, like, put that on Reddit. To one of my buddies, you know what I mean?
Like,
get some upvotes. Get this one out there, see what happens. You know?
Yeah, momentum builds. Okay, no, I get that. That's funny. Okay, I got this. Maybe
it needs
Reddit
to be
worthy.
Out there, man. Yeah, it is Reddit. It's worth trying.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Like, I think it would be better coming from someone else posting about it rather than if you're like, hey, this
is
happening to
me. That makes sense.
But, like, I would be like, hey, bro, like, you know.
Yeah, can you please? Yeah, I get that. That's hilarious. That's so funny. Yeah. That's funny.
No, that's cool, man. That's very cool, and that's...
Like, I guess the question I have for you, I guess, sorry to interrupt you
no,
for
please,
complimenting.
No, please, I didn't have a...
What is, like, your goal when you perform? What is, like, have you had your ideal spot yet, or what does your ideal spot look like?
Well, I think I've had great spots.
Yeah, of course.
You know, I've executed in ways where... It was not just me executing my behalf, but it was the audience giving back the love and the audible laughter and the visual, you know, being able to see the expressions on their faces as they're laughing and feeling like we're, like if I am an orchestrator, feeling like it's like...
Yeah.
The audience
can't really see me, but what I was kind of like doing like a thing where it's almost like a commander of like a say a band or something. It was a giant band. He's like, now you guys play louder. Now you guys play louder.
Yeah, I've
felt in control like that. So. Have I ever had the perfect spot where from the moment I stepped on stage, it was ricocheted laughter, every single punchline hit until I got off stage. There was no dead space. There was no, I don't know if I've ever had that. And I assume that is possible. I assume that that is a thing that can exist. Maybe you've felt it. I can't remember a moment where it was like a dream, right? Where from the moment, like there was not a single. So I feel like I've had several bits and pieces, and I feel like I get more consistent, if that makes sense, over time. So there's more laughter, there's more audible, there's less bombs taking place. I don't know if I've... Maybe I'm chasing that perfect set unknowingly. I don't know.
Yeah.
And I would like to do it more than once, right? I'd like to... Every time I get on stage...
to have that exact same,
And I think I'm getting closer, like I said, to being more and more consistent with it.
Yeah, I think... I don't mean more of, like, of a perfect set... But I mean more like of a set that you're like, this right here is a moment that is really amazing and I can remember it forever.
I do have a handful of those throughout my comedy career.
Okay.
So, yeah, and in different ways for where I was at that time. You know, to relate to kind of what you're saying, and I won't even go into telling the story, but I'll just say when you told me that story, what made me ask the question as to whether or not you'd ever do that bit again, I did close... When I produced my own first comedy special before I moved to New York. That was kind of my send-off from Kansas City.
Hey.
I didn't sell it to a network, you know, or anything. There was dead space in at certain parts of it, but there was... It was one of those nights that's forever embedded in my comedy memory. Like, people... There were people crying during my show, and like, one of my buddies, his eyes were bloodshot red afterwards.
That's dope.
Yeah, he was like, dude, like I knew a lot of the audience, so it was my audience. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't just like a random comedy club that I popped in where no one knew me. Like, there was a lot of people that came to see me. They were there for me, you know, friends, following, whatever. But I, you know, just fuck.
Yeah.
Boom,
yeah, you know? That's good. Yeah.
And that feeling was good, but I did close that night with a bit that I don't remember ever trying it again. It was one of those where it was in the moment. It was talking about going down on a girl, and it was a real authentic, organic story that I told that audience. And I wanted to make sure it wasn't too dirty for them, that they were ready to go there. Getting their consent, essentially. I got the audience's consent for the joke, essentially. And it was a organic story about, you know, in my opinion, you know, how to go down on a girl in a way that I had discovered that was different than anything I had ever learned, that resulted in, you know, something I just didn't even know was possible with a woman. So,
wow, that's dope.
Yeah. So
that's amazing.
In summary,
but that's exactly what I meant. I think as comics, we put so much pressure on ourselves, in the sense we always have to have a perfect set, which, yes, it's nice to have a perfect set, a great set, every time we perform. But also, there's a lot of memorable moments that we have in our sets that we have to also, I think, hold on to.
Yes.
You know, I'm hoping that I could talk to a few comics. I'm going to see if I can get actually a clip of it from one of my friends, because my friend was filming some of it. So I'm hoping that maybe she has some of it that she can show me and I can post somewhere. Because you're right, there's moments like that where people are going... It's when they say trapping lightning in a bottle.
Yeah.
For me, that's what that is.
Yeah.
If I have a great set on top of it, perfect. But the goal is to make sure, and I know all those guys that was there at that night, they remember that show.
Yeah.
The lady, Charlie, she remembers that show. She has to. The audience, the comics that were watching in the back, they remember that show. For me, that's where I'm at. And I have to go, all right, that's dope. I can kill, hopefully, another show, but... That shouldn't be the thing I'm striving for every time. The thing I should be striving for, at least I want to, is something that I can go, what are we all going to remember tonight? Okay. Isn't that amazing that we did this? When people see Mark Norman, he's hilarious.
Yeah.
And people are going to remember, I saw Mark Norman today.
Yeah.
sometimes they remember the jokes that he did, but they remember him, and that's dope. Yeah. They might not remember who I was. I guarantee you they don't remember my name at all. But they definitely remember that night. And that, for me, is what I'm trying to go for. I want that.
I bet they do remember your name from that night.
That, hopefully. Yeah, hopefully. Yeah. Hopefully I see you again, Charlie. wherever you are out there. You're listening to this podcast. I know you are.
Does she follow you on social media?
I did not try to talk to her at all. I was... Really? For me, I didn't know... what that was.
Yeah.
It was, I've never done anything like that before.
Yeah.
So when she came up.
You didn't seem like you wanted to chase or like over. You did it, you put it out there, and you wanted that to be what it was rather than like, hey, are you
maybe we can get a drink later. And I don't want to, for me, I try not to ruin any moment I have, which I also don't make that many moments, but I try not to ruin any moments I'm having. And for me, I was like, that moment was so pure. With, like, the people's emotions for what happened to them actually enjoying it and liking it.
You didn't want to risk taking anything away.
God forbid we would have got drinks and had sex. That would be like, all right, well, no, that was just... It was just all led to a hookup. I don't want that. I wasn't trying to do that.
Dude, fist pound on that, like... There's something to be said about that artistic sanctity. Or pure is the word that you use there, man. I respect that, man.
Oh, thank you, buddy. I appreciate you.
Yeah. That's cool, dude. That's... Wow.
Yeah, maybe I still have a child mind. I think I might have a child mind. I think that's what it is. I think I'm very immature still. But when we're kids and you like someone, I like you. And that's the most you can actually like someone because you don't want anything of them other you want them to have, like, your attention. Focus on me.
You want them to like you.
Yeah, exactly. I like you. So like me back so we can like each other together and that's it. But the older you get, it's, I like you. Okay, I like you too. All right, so let's fuck.
Then
you're bringing things into it that doesn't make it genuine that it once was. And... It's not, I love you, let's fuck. It's, I like you. Okay, let's fuck. Oh, I fucked someone already. Let's get married. All right, I might get married again. So many things can be replicated, and we try to replicate so many things. So, for me, it loses authenticity.
Wow, dude.
But something like that was so pure and just natural, and I would have hated to ruin any of that.
It felt like, in a way, it had that purity of a child... who has a crush on somebody.
Yes, yeah. I don't even remember any of the comics ever going, remember that day?
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of dope for me, too, just for us not to say anything about the, like, that shit happened. It was like, shh, we out, boys. You know what I mean?
I feel like...
yeah, I was like, sorry.
No, I feel Jesus. Like Jesus would appreciate what you're saying.
Oh, yeah, okay, you know?
As far as the purity there of a childhood crush and thinking about those things and... I don't know, that's something to kind of, I think for all of us to, not that, I'm not trying to bring Jesus into this, but for the purity part, like,
yeah.
I think we could all take a second to reflect on what Chris is talking about there with remembering how pure it was to have a crush on somebody and to the idea of bringing other things like, oh, I'm just trying to get laid, because it is like an adult, like, habit or impulse to just be thinking about, at least for... a lot of guys and some women, I don't know, I can't speak for everyone, I can only speak for myself, but I know that as a human, it's easy to get into that habit of, like, thinking, oh, I need to get laid, or whatever, but when you kind of cut that out because of something that's pure, and you remember what it was like to have a crush as a child, it kind of refreshes things.
Right? Yeah.
It kind of puts a refresher on it that we could all kind of sit back and ponder for a second.
Yes. Yeah, no, I agree to that. So for me, that's all it was, and I didn't want to take anything away from it. And I try to do that as often as I can, and I don't know if I... It's hard trying to capture lightning every time, but I think moments like... And I think that's why we have such a great connection with each other, because I'm genuinely your friend, and I find you hilarious, and there's nothing that I want from you other than your friendship.
Well,
and I think that's the closest
that's
you can get.
Yeah, right?
It's perfect.
Yeah.
If you ever needed money, I might give you some. But, like, you know what I mean? That's not the thing you're asking, and that's the point, you know?
Yeah. That's awesome, man. And right back at your genuine friendship and just being able to... interact with you.
Oh, I appreciate that, man. I appreciate
what we're doing right now, it's great. And to be able to actually capture it, you talked about capturing lightning in a bottle.
Yeah.
We're able to capture whatever is happening. You know, this conversation where we're able to really talk about the things that we love to do, which is comedy, you know? Yeah. And you love it, right?
Yeah.
So is that what drew you to comedy? Did you love it, or what drew you to comedy?
I do love comedy, but what drew me to comedy is that I worked as a producer for CBS.
Okay.
With Gayle King and Charlie Rose before they got rid of Charlie Rose. And I can't remember the other chick's name. Her name was Erica, but she also left, but not to be getting canceled. But I worked there, and I wanted to be a reporter, like a news reporter. And after working there for like a year, I realized, nah, that's not what I want to do. And the reason why is because news reporting seems like they want to feed the energy, but they want to feed the energy from fright tactics and trying to frighten you and scare you and make you hate someone and feel bad afterwards. And comedy is doing the exact opposite. It's just to make you laugh. It's almost like Monster Inc. You know, Monster Inc. I'm going to scare you.
Yeah.
And then you find out, if I can make the kid laugh, I get the exact same energy.
Yeah.
That's what it seems like for me in comedy. I feel like I can make you laugh and give you the exact same information, but my goal is to try to make you laugh at it.
And feel good.
Exactly.
Not scare you.
Exactly.
Liberate you, if anything.
Exactly.
Right? And I'll step into the liberation comment, because part of comedy sometimes, depending on how one does it, everyone's their own unique artist as a comedian, but what I'll do sometimes, or what I've seen that I also like others do, is when a comedian talks about embarrassing things that are relatable, there's something liberating about seeing a guy standing on stage in front of hundreds of people and potentially on TV in front of millions of people talking about something embarrassing that you've felt about yourself before and probably haven't ever even told a soul.
Exactly.
So you see this dude on stage, or this woman, or them, they, whoever
a comic,
it is, a comedian human who's on stage talking about embarrassing shit to the world. To the ether, to infinity, which is what we're doing right now, essentially.
Yeah.
And you're like, that motherfucker is my hero. Like,
yeah.
I feel liberated. If they can do that, why can't I?
Yes. Yes.
Right?
Exactly.
I'm not weird.
Yeah.
You know, it's awesome, man.
You put it in perfect words. Yeah. They feel connected. And I think that's a thing that we all kind of need and want more now than ever before.
Oh, yeah.
Just to feel that someone's doing what I'm doing. I think that's why memes are so big. Because I'm not sure if you've ever seen those obscure ones, the ones that don't make sense sometimes, where they'll like write letters at the beginning of it, and they'll go, can you guess what this is? And it's like at least 30 letters long. Yeah. And then it's usually like, get your ass out of here before I beat your ass. And it's like, oh, everyone can relate to those. That's the first letters we think when we hear them in that order. We all just want to be connected. So I definitely do agree with that. Yeah,
I think one of the funniest memes I've ever seen. It sounds terrible, but it was a picture of a guy. Like, it was like a low hanging basketball hoop, you know, like all the way down, outside, and a dude. This is gonna sound terrible, so guys, I'm not trying to say that I support in any way. I'll explain.
I'll support it. Go ahead.
This dude is dunking on this girl. Like, we're talking, like, chest out, you know, like that.
Like Vince Carter,
like the Michael Jordan pose.
Like,
and she's like standing in 100%. Fearless,
you know, thinking he's gonna dunk on her.
Like, she's like, I am not letting this motherfucker dunk on me. Like, and the caption says, the caption said, when she says, if you can't dunk on her, or if you don't score, she can go through your
phone. Yes, he's banging on her. Yeah, yeah, perfect. It's such a perfect place joke. Yeah.
And I think if I didn't explain it, you get it, but if the audience didn't get it, basically, I have to explain it just so they know, like, it's basically saying that, like, most guys, like, hopefully, I don't operate
our
this
phones way. Are private. Don't go in our phones or we'll dunk on you. Sorry.
Yeah, there you go.
Sorry.
There you go. So, there you go. That's a good way of summarizing it. So.
That's it. Yeah. And I think we all can relate to that.
Yeah.
I think someone who hasn't been in a relationship, and people who have been in a relationship, multiple relationships, they all go, I don't want you going through my phone. I don't want my friends going through my phone. You think I'm going to let you go through my phone?
Yeah.
And all I have to do is dunk on you? I'm going to bang it hard, like some Vince Carter. Hold your head. And it makes so much sense. And I think that's what's so fun about memes. I think we can all connect to them. Every meme that is popular is because millions of people have gone through it, and we go, I've been there.
Yeah.
Someone who wrote it, we don't even know, has also been through it. Yeah. And they found a perfect way of doing it. Yeah.
Well, I think that kind of captures that topic.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah. Well, I know that we were potentially... Well, there's a couple of things. Tell me about something... So you told me about something in the past that you're very proud of and that you liked in comedy.
Yeah.
What's something that you're maybe working on now or something that you're going to be doing in the future, either currently and or future or both, that you're excited about?
Okay.
That you're most excited... Or excited about. It doesn't have to be most excited. You don't have to, like, share whatever you don't want. But
yeah, no worries. I'll share anything you want me to share. that's how I am. I love attention. I would say... I have a lot of shows that I'm producing that I haven't... I stepped away from producing for such a long time. And I think I stepped away because I would produce my shows and I would host my shows, and that made sense. But it was cool to stop producing and have other people go, hey, I see how you host. You want to host my show?
Right.
It made me feel like, oh, I'm part of something. Yay! I didn't have a father. So what I'm doing now is I'm stepping back into the position of producing some shows. And I'm not going to just do them in New York City. They're going to be outside of the city.
Okay.
Some of them are going to be upstate. I have a show July 18th, Sunday, in Peekskills. So if anybody from Peekskills listening to this in New York City, come out to one of the shows. If you don't, no worries. There's no pressure.
Where is Peekskills? I've never heard of it, but it made me think of Catskills.
Yeah, it's next to Catskills. Okay. It's just an hour away from the city.
Peekskills?
Peekskills, yeah. Okay. Peek, yeah. I have a few more other shows I'm working on. Some are at breweries. Some of them, I have a show in Texas, like in August, which I'm happy about.
What part of
Texas? I think it's Houston. I'm going to go there and I'm going to call it Houston, though. Can I do that? Can I go there and be like, hey, it is Houston, Texas?
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
I just can't wait for them to be like, what do you say, boy?
Okay. Yeah, like, oh, we're south of Houston.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited about this new step. I'm also doing a few pilots, and I'm learning a lot. Well, yeah, you've done sketches, so you realize how much work goes into them.
Yeah, creating comedy sketches. Yes, yes.
It's amazing once you accomplish it, but it's so hard to actually get done. So I'm excited about those things too.
But a pilot is different than a sketch. So tell me, expound on it a little bit.
Okay.
Without giving anything away that you don't want to.
Oh, I don't mind giving anything away. I'm afraid, baby. Okay. No. So what was it? 3 years ago, I created a pilot for Tidal. And I was able to sell them the idea of one of my shows, which was pretty much just comics taking lyrics to a rap song and just making it whatever they felt like it was.
So the lyrics were already there, though.
The lyrics are already a part of the song, yeah.
Okay.
And the comics will hear it, and it'll be like, there's a line where, what's his name? Little Puma, I think his name? Little Pump. He goes, Ragbone Man, that's what he says.
Okay.
And most people was like, I don't know what he's saying. I don't know what that is.
Yeah,
but there's one comic, Richie Redding, who goes, oh no, those are the name of jeans. He's saying Ragbone Jeans. And I'm like,
wow,
what? Okay. That's so... But he was the only one. Everyone else was like, actually, he's praying. Yeah. And some people was I think Alex Babbitt said, this is... a testament to Boomhauer from King of the Hill.
Yeah.
So it was just people, comics saying very weird things to song lyrics that might be true and might not be true.
Oh, and it's up to the crowd to decide what's true and what's
not. Yeah, it was going to be just an educational thing. You know, that was it.
So it's on, you're filming, you're taking a lyric and you're filming people like a documentary style.
It's kind of like documentary-esque, but we didn't take a lyric, we took the whole song. So the song's like 2 minutes long.
Okay.
So we just have five comics break down this 2 minute song, and we'll just use the best sound bite for what worked for whatever lyric
that's
we wanted.
Cool.
It was very fun. We sold the idea already, so they have that, so that's fun. But I'm doing more content similar to that where we're doing music, and I'm doing some sketch ideas, but that's going to be separate. I have some sitcom ideas in the works too, and now I think this summer is going to be me either shooting them or going crazy trying to shoot them.
Okay.
Yeah.
One of the you got a lot going on, which is fantastic, man.
Oh, it's nothing. I can do so much more than I should be.
Well, I do want to say a couple of things as I am digesting all that. It reminded me kind of two things when I was playing football. One of the things that was so fun and funny, because it wasn't forced. It was just coming from within. But when I was on the football team at Mizzou, when we would stretch, for whatever reason, the guys... Well, we're all, there's like 120 dudes, like we'll be laying on our backs, like doing some weird like thing.
Yeah.
Someone who felt compelled would yell just a random phrase from a random rap song, but in the most robotic voice ever. So you know, like let me think of a random rap lyric. Like I can't help but think of Pharrell with Snoop Dogg. Oh.
Yeah.
You know. Interiors like suicide resort. I can exercise you. This so you'd be like, you could be like, you know, someone would be like, I can exercise you. This can be your phys ed. Cheat on your man, ma. That's how you get a his ed.
Yeah.
And then like someone else would just start singing, you know, like, you know, just like drop top raindrop. You know, you know, like, and it was just so absurd. And the more random, the funnier.
Yes,
you know what I mean?
Yes.
And just it was like that internal. So that it's not exactly what you're talking about because we wouldn't break it down. But it was so funny, and I have done that before for fun. Like, even that song, Pharrell, I know the lyrics, and I remember thinking, like, well, you know, the Phantom exterior, you know.
Yeah, it's dropping like it's hot, yes.
Yeah, the Phantom exterior, like, anyway, I remember thinking, oh, the Phantom, what is that? You know, it's like, oh, the Phantom is a car, it's a whip,
yes.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
The interior, like, suicide wrist red, that sounds bad, but it's actually just talking about the interior. He's just saying that the interior is red, you know what I mean?
Yes.
He's just saying that it might be felt, it might, you know what I mean? Like,
you would have been perfect for the show, sir. Yes, that's literally, I think, I forgot how I came up with the idea, but I'm pretty sure I was probably at, like, either karaoke or some bar where they were playing music, and I just heard someone explaining what the song was. I'm like, that is such a funny thing.
Yeah.
Because it is. It is hilarious to watch someone explain with complete logic what some rapper is saying when the rapper's walking around with a tiger. It's like, what are you talking about, man? It's so weird. But that is a very funny thing. So that's one of the things we did. It's I want to make things that are fun because I'm trying to live a fun lifestyle.
That's what it's got to be, man.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're having fun in the stuff that you're making, first of all, at the end of the day, you're the artist of your life, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Why not have fun creating the art that you're doing? That the journey is probably the biggest treat of it all.
Yeah.
So why miss out because you're always chasing what you think? You know, it's like, how about just having fun in the journey?
Yeah.
How about, like, having fun doing comedy?
Yeah.
Creating fun content and being like, you know, I'd like some likes, but fuck, how about I just create something that I like.
Yeah.
And you know what's funny is usually people like stuff where you are having fun.
Yep.
When you're on stage and you're having a good time, the audience is all of a sudden having a good time.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So if the mindset is shifted, because a lot of people are chasing, but if it's shifted to, you know what, I'm not chasing anymore. I'm doing me, baby.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
You know, I'm living life to the fullest.
Shout out to anyone who is living them. I feel we live in a culture. Don't want to get too much into it.
I don't care. We're talking.
Hey, good. I'm down. All right. I feel like we are living in a culture now where we are taught to chase after anything that we want, which is going to get us money. I think that's why OnlyFans exists. I think that's why we have rappers doing really stupid things. I think that's why we have the SoundCloud. I think that's why we have actors who sometimes don't know how to act, but they go, I'm going to just keep on, because we're all chasing money. And the sad thing is, I think we lose ourselves within doing that. I think we go, all right, well, this is what the popular crowd is doing. This is what I should be doing because I see this is how Michael B. Jordan made it. I got to follow this route. Instead of just going, all right, well, maybe I just do Chris Hamilton and just see what happens.
There's only one Chris Hamilton in this world.
Yeah.
And the world
needs...
Because
I killed them all. Oh, huh? Wait, sorry, what happened?
But the world needs the only Chris Hamilton exists. It doesn't need... the absence of Chris Hamilton who's chasing something else that's not Chris Hamilton. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And Michael Oldroyd, the same, like, the world needs me. Not me trying
playing
to be
someone else.
Or trying to follow some mold that somebody else did.
Yeah.
My audience wants and needs me.
Yeah.
They don't want to hear me changing because someone said I can't do this or I can't do that or you're supposed to do it this way. I mean, we talked about it briefly, and maybe I'm taking it to a new level, but even with the whole being afraid of cancel culture and being afraid of what you're supposed to say, it's like, how about I just fucking just, like, put myself out there
and
quit being afraid, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
that's what
that's what the world needs. That's what is most interesting to listen to anyway. Someone's unique voice.
Yeah.
That's what stands out, right? Because there's all these voices that start becoming the same when everyone's chasing lifestyle, whatever you want to call it. People falling in line to this, like, conveyor belt of what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, it's called the clout. Sorry, keep going.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. But what stands out and what people pay attention to is when all of a sudden there's some authenticity there. And you're not being authentic for the sake of being authentic. All you're doing is being you.
Yes, yeah,
you
I know? Agree.
Because there only is one you.
Yes, yeah. I think everything you said is so spot on. And I feel bad for the future because I think you will be you. You'll be Michael Aldroyd and you'll do your thing. You'll do what you need to do for what you need to accomplish to whatever that goal might be. And then someone will see it on Facebook, on Instagram and go, wow, I'm going to be Michael Aldroyd. You go, what? No, I'm me. He goes, yeah. No, I'm you now too. He goes, no, you can't be me. I'm me. And I go, well, I got to be you. He's like, no, be yourself. I don't know who I am. Well, figure out who you are. You can be yourself. He's like, all right, I think I am you. He's like, that's not who you are. You can't be me. I'm me. Be you. And
funny.
I think there's so much of that on the internet. I think
that's, so that's a compliment, but at the same time, like, I hope that I can still convince that person somehow or persons to truly unlock who they are.
Yeah, yeah. And that, yeah. I think that is the goal. The sad thing is, I think, you've seen the vaudeville stuff on TikTok and Instagram. It's they hear a joke and they just repeat that joke. And then they'll find their way, their variety of doing that show or that joke, whatever. And it's nice, but they're doing it just to get a following. They're not doing it to like because they love that.
Yeah.
They just want the lifestyle, but not the hard work that goes right into it. And I don't mean to bash anyone by saying that. But you see, I think there's some people that write like, oh, this person steals content. And I think what we were talking about, I think his name was Big Fat Jew, that guy. Do you remember?
Okay, yeah.
When he almost had the Comedy Central
show. I've seen him in Greenwich Village, by the way. But tell me.
Oh, my God, he probably stole some jokes. No, I'm joking.
No, I'll tell you about it after. I want to hear what you're saying.
Okay, luckily, people are becoming aware of it. But I think he was one of the first few people that stole content and kind of played it off as if it was his own. And certain comics were like, hey, you're taking away from us. And the sad thing was he did have a bigger following. He did have a platform. People watched him. And luckily, enough people were saying, hey, you're stealing content, that his followers went, oh, we didn't know he's stealing content. Okay. Oh, but wow. Now, everyone's stealing content.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone's kind of doing that, which is sad. So as I might be myself and be unique and you might be yourself and unique, someone else might find a way to go, oh, well, I know how to make that a business. I know how to take what you are doing and make it into something.
But the cool thing is if you work hard enough and never give up, this sounds sensational, but I think that you'll still, you as in anyone who does it, will still push past that, like, the sound barrier there. You know,
I hope so.
There's still a sonic boom that can be broken through by being authentic. And it's the longer journey.
Yeah.
It's the opposite of the get rich quick.
Get rich real slow.
And this is, I don't mean to like force this into the conversation. That's how I want to live my life.
Yeah.
Rather than chasing the following, how about I just do me? And you know what? Maybe a following will come. Luckily, the people who do follow me are very loyal. And the quality of my following is much greater than the quantity of my following.
No, that's good. That's good. That's what you need. Yeah.
I think because they really, it's almost like I have a personal relationship with most of my following.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that there's a stronger connection there. So I have, for me,
that's perfect, and I do
quality,
agree with that. Yeah.
Quantity. And the quantity might also come at some point, and if it doesn't, I'm not sacrificing the quality of myself or my following.
And that's good.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's just my thought.
I'm selling out immediately. No, because you're like, I'm messing with you. But no, I agree with you. And
but I truly do believe that the best art comes from the route that we're talking about versus the other way.
Yeah.
And what happens to the best art that exists? A following happens. A big following. You know what I mean? So
I agree a big following does happen. I also agree that duplicates also happen. And it's not bad. I think what they say, it's a complimentary if they copy you or something like that, right? Isn't that something they say? And I do agree. I would say, like, I enjoyed Reservoir Dogs. I enjoy Pulp Fiction. I think those are the original, the originators of whatever genre they were creating. And I think now we can look at certain movies and we go, oh, they're just kind of like kind of like taking from them, aren't they? You know what I mean? Yeah. And mind you, it might not hold up in history, but if someone watches that rather than the original, I guess a better example would be The Joker, which took from Taxi Cab, it took from other special movies that were created. And
you're talking about the one with Joaquin Phoenix?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. And it was like also mentioned that, like, we took from a lot of these other movies. It was inspired by all these other movies, and that's how we created this. And we go, all right, cool. And people like The Joker, and some people go, all right, well, I see what you did, though. You just took from all these other historical movies,
yeah,
and you just took all the best parts and just made into this.
I see what you're saying.
And it's not bad. I don't think that's bad. But I do realize those people are chasing something as we are just walking our journey, you know?
The people who made it are chasing something?
Yes, yeah, because that's all corporate-based. You know, corporations, DC Comics, like, well, we just have to find the best of whatever. Let's get the writer who can write something that'll be nice, but also has these things in mind. But when you're writing something, you're going, this is what I find funny, this is what I find amazing, this might be inspirational. Yeah. And someone who's going to copy you will just look at the thing that you found funny and go, I'll just take that. And I'll just take the thing that inspires. I'll do something else with it, but I'm seeing what you are. And I don't think anything's wrong with that, but I do think we are losing, as a culture, just originality. Yeah. I think it's harder to do because we have so many things we're trying to promote. Models, funny people, you know, there's so many people that are trying to be famous. We're all chasing the clout, and people who aren't, it's like, oh, you don't have to, but if I get there before you, I'm going to kind of say I did your stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
But well, I know what you mean.
My thought is, from a selfish perspective, it makes me go, well, that'll just help me stand out more.
Yes.
My goal is to make the funniest stuff that I possibly can and the best quality stuff.
Yeah.
Based on, you know, whatever resources that I have. So, and then it's a continual process of getting better, right? We talked about that idea of chasing the best set ever.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I hear what you're saying, and when I zoom out of myself and I look at the bigger picture, I see what you're saying. That absolutely is also happening or happens. And
yeah, I wanted to say, if Jesus didn't get crucified, there would be people like, well, I'm going to try to do what Jesus did. Like, they're like, I'm going to be the next Jesus. I'm Jesus Christ. Yeah. It's like, well, you know, we did the last one. You go, oh, never mind. I can't be that guy. But I feel that a lot of people try to duplicate what they do see. And I don't think it's bad nor good, but I do notice that it happens. And I think it becomes overwhelmingly scary when everyone goes, all right, well, I'm going to try to be that. I'm not sure if you notice, but it seems like most people on the internet and also in life now try to be very witty. Have you noticed? Everyone wants a comeback.
Yeah.
Everybody. And now comics, as we are, we do the opposite now. We go, oh, sometimes I try to come up with something witty and I don't at the moment. So I'm like eating popcorn and I'm going, fuck you. I was like, I should have said that to him. That's what I should have said. You know, it's you try to come up with a comeback, but you're so far away from it. I think that's what we do.
Online, you're saying.
Or yeah, online, in person. I think everyone's trying to be witty now.
Yeah.
And I don't think everyone was always trying to be witty. Not everyone wanted the last word. Not everyone wanted to be the sassy person.
Yeah.
Some people was like, no, I'm fine. Every Marvel superhero is witty. Every Marvel. Why?
Yeah. Yeah.
There's not one time where someone says something to Iron Man. Iron Man's like, I'm the smartest man. I can't think of anything right now.
Wait, what about the big giant metal guy that hangs out with Deadpool? Like the most boring, perfect.
Oh,
like,
Colossus. Colossus. Yeah, yeah.
It's like, Deadpool, I will not say fuck.
Yeah.
And he finally makes him say it like it is dying. And he's like, fuck.
Yeah.
That was so funny. That's though. A good movie. You know,
like, I do like that. Deadpool 1 and 2 are amazing for those who haven't seen it. Go ahead and watch that too.
Yeah.
Shout out to Deadpool. Yeah. Buddy, I appreciate you though. I want to talk a little bit more about just like what I know. I'm trying to say the right words. What do you have going on that you're excited about? Because I feel like you're a very wonderful, passionate, good person.
Thank you.
And I'm not sure if by you being a good person, we don't get to hear that often of what you are accomplishing, what you're doing.
Yeah, thank you, man. Thanks for putting the spotlight on me for a second. I'm just really excited that it's twofold, but they're both connected. So me and the world, right? Yeah. I'm excited to see that the world is emerging from just a fucking just a shit year, right? We all experienced it in different ways, but I don't think anyone was like, yeah, this is awesome, you know? And if there are, I would say psychologists might say there's something wrong with that person. I don't know, but I'm going to hypothesize that there might be some psychologists who say there might be an issue if you were excited about 2020. Now, you can be excited about the silver lining of it or the takeaways, and I think it's important to reflect on those, but and learn, I think we all probably learned things from it and grew from, you know, so those are good things to focus on. But as things are getting better, or they appear to be, I can see it in front of my face here in New York. You know, I was here for the first 90 days, the worst part of it, the hell, when New York was like, is this hell? I think this might be hell. So to see it not hell, to see that New York is bouncing back, that it's not dead, to see that the world, the numbers are going down on COVID and all these things and things appearing to be better and appearing to continue to, like, the light at the end of the tunnel is here now. Now we're, like, coming out of the tunnel. To have that happening is very exciting for me for several reasons. It's allowing me to do comedy again. It's allowing me to be back in New York for different reasons. Everyone's circumstances and why that's the case, we don't need to get into all the details unless you want to. But the fact is that I'm back here for the first time since I cried when I left New York in August. Like I cried. I was living in my dream apartment. And I had to make that decision because it was best for a variety of reasons. And I remember leaving my building crying and feeling like the pandemic was that thing in the spoke. It was a heckler of life, right?
Yeah.
The pandemic was a heckler of our lives and my personal life. So they are intertwined. And now the heckler removed the thing or whatever. The bike is moving again, and in some ways it allows me, I'm finding that I'm better at stand-up comedy than I was before the pandemic. So for whatever reason, whether it's because I grew from it, I don't know exactly what, whether it was like refreshing an etch-and-sketch, you know, those etch-and-sketches, like somehow it was like this, like where the future was like, okay, what the fuck, like now I don't know, like, what's the best path forward? I know I still love comedy and making people laugh. Is that even possible in a digital age? And we're, you know, everything's virtual now. Like, questioning all these things. And now that the paths are emerging or options, and I'm coming out of that better at stand-up. And also because of the work I started to put in. I went to Florida for 3 weeks, and I was out there hustling and grinding, and I was doing a lot of shows on this pier called St. Pete's Pier. So I was doing a lot of stuff during the day, going out and doing shows at night. I was getting work down there. I was getting paid to feature, and I was hitting a couple good showcases where more doors are opening. Money's coming from it. Not a lot, but
something more, that's,
you know,
good.
And I'm like, it's like when you, I talked about it on the podcast before, but the best analogy I could say is when Iron Man takes off his suit and he like tinkers it and then like puts it back on, and like automatically you see all the parts like reemerging, like that's how I feel my comedy suit has come back to me after the pandemic. I feel that I have an upgraded suit, an upgraded comedy suit, and I can tell by internally gauging it and really embodying the jokes, and really like, you know, like, versus, hey guys, I'm
committing to it,
really just being it,
being
like,
in it,
and I see the reactions, you know, getting compliments from audience members at a certain comedy club recently. I won't say because I don't want to tie it to any comedians or clubs, but having people come up to me after shows and telling me, you're the funniest dude I saw tonight. Having somebody come up to me last week and say, you're the funniest comedian I've ever seen in my life. Not knowing if he's talking about, maybe he's only been to one comedy show in his life.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's comparing me to.
That's very humble of you, but I get what you're saying,
Yeah, like, I'm open to a wide variety of what that can mean. You know what I mean? But either way, for him, it mattered. You know? And so I'm excited for all of that. Were you going to say something? I don't want
to. No, I was just going to compare it to, you know, we do marathons, and there's that one person that gives you water.
Yeah.
That's what that is. It's just, they want you to keep going. Just, you are great. You're the best, man.
There's a lot of people giving me water, dude.
Yeah,
there's
that's
a
good.
Lot of people giving
honestly,
me water.
And honestly, we deserve it.
Well, thank you, man. And even just, like, with having a place to stay right now, somebody just, like, doors open.
Yeah.
I feel like when you're a good person, and sometimes you question, you know, sometimes when you do good, Maybe we could compare this to Jesus in a way. Yes. But sometimes when you try to do good and you just get kicked in the face, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you're like, man, like, I genuinely, why am I, like, getting kicked in the face for, like, doing what I know is right, you know, repeatedly and sometimes it not. But, like, I don't know, like, right now doors are opening and people are giving me water and wind under my wings, whatever you want to call it, like, having a place to stay, not having to worry about that. I'm in a situation at this very moment, and I don't know how long it will last. You can never take anything for granted. But, like, I'm in a situation where I can put everything I have into art, into this, into creating, and I try to make each day count because I don't know how long that will or won't last. But, like, everything from writing during the day, I can do that. I can, you know, I can just put it all into it, you know, at this moment. So,
and for the record, I think that makes perfect sense why you have things coming your way and doors opening, because not only are you a hilarious comic, you're also very nice. And I think if you are both of those things, if you can be nice and a killer on stage, people want to be around you. You're not a burden to anything. You're not a burden to any business. People, but, oh, okay, you're here. You make the show better by just being there. Because once the show happens, if you're not booked on the show, they go, we have a guy we're going to put on because he's funny. We have a guy who we're going to put on because he's good to be around. So for me, I listen to that and I go, that's the quality of being a nice person. And genuinely, I think that's why people think that some people say things that they don't necessarily mean, but it's just nice. Because good things should happen to good people and nice people, and you genuinely are. I haven't seen anything or heard anything of where you're doing anything crazy. And I think as another nice person talking to a nice person.
yeah.
I think a lot of people think, oh, well, there's like something dark within him. Then he's hiding something. Yeah. And it's like, I'm not. But even if I was, why would you want me to bring that out? Like, why? Just let me be who I am.
Yeah.
You know, and more comfortable being.
I'm thankful, and I feel that this is true for you, but I'm thankful that my default setting is genuine kindness, like, so I don't have to act. My kindness is not an act, and I'm thankful for that. I would hate to have that be an act. I would hate for me caring about other people to have to be an act.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I'm thankful that it's the default setting. I don't feel right if I'm not that way.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
No, I completely get that. That makes so much sense. I feel that I can't see anyone putting on an act for that long other than, what, 2 weeks?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it can't be too long
because
people eventually start taking advantage of how nice you are.
Yeah.
People try to test you to see how nice you're going to be.
Right.
How would you handle this situation?
Yeah.
And, and if you are a nice person, I think what you have on your side is that you're genuinely a nice person. I think for me, I'm stupid. and I'm like, all right, I'll just wait here until everything. And it's like, wow, he's so nice. He's so patient. I was like, where else could I have gone? Like, is there something else I could have done?
You know? There's something about a default kindness, though, where there are people giving you water, though. Like, people.
Yeah.
So, like, if you're going to be selfish, if your mindset is, I'm going to take, then you're taking responsibility and ownership of everything unfolding for yourself. But if you give, and I'm not saying, I'm a human being. I take at times too.
Like,
I'm not claiming to be perfect. You know what I mean? I try to give, and I also know that I have to take. But if you transition from always taking to trying to come from a disposition of like giving, I'm not saying like going out and just giving like money to people or something, but like that's just a random example. But like giving your time or just a conscientious interaction, whatever it may be, or respect, whatever that is, if you are giving those types of things that I think are very important, then all of a sudden water starts appearing from random places that you can't see. You know, you can't even see their faces sometimes. It's like the Hunger Games. You know, like sponsors.
I have sponsors,
dude.
That's good. And
I shout out to my sponsors, seen and unseen, hidden and unhidden.
Yeah.
So I hope that answers your question.
It did. It did answer. I believe it answered my questions.
What am I excited? I'm just excited about doing stand-up. I'm excited about being able to create.
Yes, the excitement part. That was, yeah, that was the last part.
Excited about doing New York comedy again. Stand-up specifically is mainly what I've been focusing on. Musical comedy, having access to be able to create comedic humor through music, and just collaborating with people again, old connections that I had prior to the pandemic here in New York and elsewhere, and just being able to get on. I did 9 shows on Friday and Saturday, and just it was like I was exhausted after the 6th show Saturday night, and but that was the type of exhaustion that I want to feel.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's dope, man.
And that doesn't always happen. I think that's the most shows I've ever done in a weekend.
Yeah, we get some rewards, and yeah, it's good when we have those big things. So,
That's what I'm most excited about right now, you know, just being able to do all that. You know,
that's good. Yeah. No, and keep it going, man. I'm going to look at my phone. Don't mind me.
Yeah.
But I'm going to look at my phone.
See what time it is.
Not to see what time it is, to see if I have a spot for you, if you're going to still be in the city, because I know that might be up in the air still, but I'm doing a show the 21st of July in Park Slope. If you are free, I would love for you to come by and do a spot.
Well, that's awesome, first of all. Do you... When would it be most helpful for you to know? Because I'm still trying to figure out how long I'm going to be here.
Whenever you figure it out. I'll leave the spot open, so that way you can decide.
Awesome.
And you can let me know.
And spots are... They go quick. Like, you give it to someone, they'll take it. So it's not
You...
Okay.
My way of trying to book shows now, and this might be a weird thing, it's literally of, like, if they're in it. If they're in it, then cool. I'll let you know, and I'll reserve the spot. And if you can make it, you can. And if you can't, I might find someone to fill it up, but...
My mind is 100% in it. I just need to make sure.
I'm
going to be around. Is that?
Yeah, of course. Okay. I love watching you make a deal, because you were such a kind individual, and like if you were like a triangle, or your edges would be cut off. To like, I don't want to hurt anything. Just let me just know. I don't want you to get stabbed.
Yeah.
So for talking to you and listening to what you were saying earlier too, I forgot what it was, but you was like, and women and men. Yeah. Like, you're being so inclusive. Yeah. Yeah. You're such a genuinely good person that it's so refreshing.
Yeah.
That I'm like, yeah, this guy, he deserves a lot.
Right back at you. Oh man,
thank you. I appreciate
that. Yeah. No. I appreciate it. It's awesome. It's cool to be seen like that.
Yeah, I know every time I do randomly see you at a bar, I'm always happier.
Me too.
Which, oh my God, this is dope.
Yeah.
Because I know I'm in the right environment. Yeah, you know what I mean?
That's what's up, man.
Yeah, that's what's up.
Yeah, man. Because, you know, I'm looking out for you, man. So.
Same here, man. I appreciate that. Yeah. I appreciate that a lot.
I know there was a couple other potential topics. We can end it now, or we can... I know that we were potentially going to talk about what it was like for you being here during the quarantine. I know you...
Yeah.
I know you wanted to... Maybe I already answered. I know at one point you mentioned, like, you always are curious to hear my opinion on certain things. So maybe it's that or something else, but I feel like that still is...
I think if you're down, we can do this one more segment, and then I probably should be heading off soon.
Yeah.
But only because I feel like this podcast is, what, like 2 hours right now?
Right now it's 1:30.
1:30?
I usually try not to go over 2 hours.
Yeah.
And I know people don't have that kind of time. So it's completely up to you, man.
Oh, that's fucking nice. Yeah. I love the Joe Rogan rule.
I didn't even know
that. No, that's not necessarily his thing. But I do find, you know, he usually has his podcast and it's usually long. I'm down with talking about the pandemic situation. I do have errands to run still, so we might have to cut it short.
From here on out, it's on you. So you're in command of the ship right now. You got the rudder, so. You know, I'm turning it over to you.
Right? I love you, man. Yeah. You know what I think it is? And I don't want this to sound old. I'm not sure how old you are. But
34?
Okay, yeah. So you're like 2 years older than me. I'm 32.
Okay.
You remind me of me when I used to weightlift.
Okay.
And like the sad thing was, when I would weightlift, you know, when I would weightlift, it would be easy. But when I was spotting someone, and they're like, all right, I got fucking 250. You gonna help me, Chris? I'm like, yeah, man, I got your back, but... If you can't do it, you don't have to. And it's like, I post the lifties. I know, but if you don't feel like it.
Yeah, okay, like, that's funny. That's
yeah, you know? Yeah. Yeah, I'm like, yeah, man, I fucking got your back, but just in case, man, just know you are you no matter what you do. It's like, wait, what? Help me with this weight. Dude. Like, I got your back, buddy. Don't worry. Yeah.
When I was on the football team, he reminded me, there was one dude I was spotting. I was good buddies with this one dude. Connell Davis, shout out to you. One of the best athletes I've ever known in my life. At Mizzou, and I was spotting him. He was a lot stronger than I was. He was an amazing athlete. And anyway, he's doing a dumbbell, just the dumbbell bench, right? Yeah. So like the separate ones. And I was spotting him on the side. You're supposed to spot where the wrist is, because if you grab this, you can hurt the wrist.
Yeah.
So you spot here and lift up, right? They can't see, but you spot the forearm on each side. And I remember every time there was this one specific time, and I'm like, you got it, get it, you know? And he would hit it. And then you go back down, I'm like, you got this. And he, like, set the weight down, and he goes, will you shut up? He goes, I don't need you cheering me on in between every fucking rep.
That's so funny. I was like, dude, my bad.
I'm sorry, man. I just gave you 100. I said you wanted 100. You didn't want 100. I got you now. Yeah, don't worry.
I will shut up. You know?
That is so funny. That is so hilarious. Yeah.
So I get what you're saying. I've done that type of thing. So, yeah. Yeah, let's hit it, man. You tell me where you want to go with this.
Yeah. Well, first, that's inspiring. That's good. I don't think that's bad at all. I think that's very fun. Yeah. I also didn't know that's how you pose a spot. I always just... put one hand under the bar, and I'll put one hand over it.
Well, the bar is different than the separate dumbbells.
Oh, okay, so he was doing separate
dumbbells.
Okay, I get that. Yeah,
small individual dumbbells.
Okay, cool. I was just making sure. I was like, was that?
Yeah.
Putting them in danger?
No, with the bar,
you just hold the... Yeah, okay, yeah. Okay, cool, okay. So I was... Okay. For me, I go, that's a perfect description of who you are and how some people might react to how energetically wonderful you are. If I'm being spotted and I go, I can do this, and someone's like, you can do it, I'm like, yeah, I know, I got this. But like, if I don't think I can do it, I need that push. Yeah. I need someone to kind of go, buddy, you got this. You got this. You can do it. One more.
Yeah.
And I know no matter how much, I can always try to max out because of that voice. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
that's
what you do. And I think you're wonderful for that.
Thank you, man.
As for the pandemic, I stayed here. I was in New York City. I didn't at first. What? How long were we closed for?
So I think it was either mid-February or early March when they started.
Yeah,
the,
it was
the lockdown.
March 15th is when the official lockdown happened, because that was a Friday and I had a show that I was producing, the cooking show. I think you might have done it. I think.
I don't believe I did the cooking.
God damn it, you were supposed to do the cooking show. Okay. So I did a cooking show at Essex Market. I'm going to look through my phone to see if I gave you some
dates.
Actually,
you did. I remember there was an upstairs.
Yeah, yes. It was upstairs area.
It was like an artsy.
Yeah.
Yeah, you gave me a spot there.
Yes, yeah.
It was fun.
Okay, I'm glad you had a good time. Yeah. It was very nerve-wracking for me. I had to bring food. It was a free show.
Yeah.
And then the people was like, how... Oh, sorry.
Oh, yeah, the sound. I would say...
Yeah, this is good.
Well, if you get too close, it'll change the... Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, okay,
yeah,
so I stay away. Okay.
Yeah, right there is good.
So I would have to bring food, make sure you had a good audience, and a good lineup. And even then, the audience would be like, can we get something else to eat? I'm like, I am feeding you, and there's a show. Enjoy the show!
Yeah.
It's like, how much do I have to give for you to be happy?
Right.
Dad. No, I'm joking. I'm joking. But... What was my point? Okay, yeah. So March 15th, Friday, was when everything started closing down. I had to cancel that show, and I didn't know. I actually told people, like, hey, the show's still happening. And then as soon as I get to the venue, there's, like, a note that says, show's shut down because pandemic.
Yeah.
And they didn't warn me, which I felt bad about. Because then I had a few emails later on. It was like, hey, we risked our lives coming to this show, and we couldn't even... eats. And I was like, okay, I get it. I'm sorry, man. I was there too. If that makes you happy, didn't make them happy at all. And then I went to a few other venues, and then we started to notice people weren't going to shows anymore.
Yeah.
And I think maybe it was 8 o'clock Friday that I'm realizing it's supposed to be lively because it's a weekend and no one's outside anymore. This is real. This is happening. I stayed home for a bit. And then, when did And then I can't remember what day, but I think it was a few weeks after, there was a club that was doing a speakeasy thing. I can't say this club's name because, God forbid, it gets out.
Yeah.
But they were breaking all the laws. And there was like, hey, you know what? You can get these drinks. You can drink these drinks because we're just going to ask the government for more money. And I was like, this is dope. I went to the back room. They had a show.
It was like a downstairs speakeasy?
Yeah, yeah. It was like a speakeasy.
What time period was this?
This was like probably a few weeks after March 15th.
So a few weeks after the lockdown.
Yes, okay. Yeah. So like audience still wasn't kind of out, but people kind of was.
Yeah.
But it was long enough that I wasn't familiar with being outside with people. And then I saw some funny comics. I was like, this is dope. We're just back at it. It's back in. It's happening again. And I remember talking to a few comics and we jumped right back into like, all right, so what should we do next? What should happen? And then this one comic was talking about, I'm going to do shows at a park. I'm going to do shows over here. I'm going to do shows on a rooftop.
Yeah.
And then comedy, even though everything was kind of closed, comedy opened back up or never closed. And it was like, all right, come out here if you want to hear some jokes. Oh, we'll do some Zooms then. Let's Zooms happen.
So basically speakeasies, outdoor shows, park shows, rooftop shows.
Prohibition Zoom. Age. Yeah, that happened. And it was dope because all you can do is get liquor and go to a comedy show. Because that's all I was open at the time. It was supermarkets. And I think at that point, liquor stores were considered essential items for some apparent reason.
Wow.
So, yeah. So people were just going to stores, going to liquor stores, and then going to comedy shows. And it was nice. And then once things started to be more familiar with what's happening, more clubs started going, all right, we're going to do speakeasy shows. We'll do park, open park shows. We'll do rooftop shows. And even though that there was a pandemic happening, it just felt like some people stepped out of what, life for a bit?
Yeah.
As life was still going on. And then slowly, I guess people started to get back into it. But it didn't feel like anything stopped when the pandemic happened. It just felt like we was like, all right, let's just social distance for a bit.
Yeah.
I started doing videos. I stopped doing them, but I'm going to start doing them again. But it just felt like we were all just on vacation, but from each other. And then once comedy got back into what it is, I would say even kind of is today, it's kind of still like a, gosh, should we really be here? Should I really be laughing? Like, ha, ha, ha. I don't know. Maybe I might, you know, get someone sick. Like, it was still kind of weird, but yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think we're past that point now.
Yeah, kind of. I still see people wear masks. And I for those who still wear masks, thank you. Continue to wear masks. Those who don't want to wear masks, you don't have to, and that's fine. I'm not on either side of if you should or shouldn't, but I do like the idea that you are considering other people as well as yourself if you are wearing a mask. And then if you aren't wearing a mask, I just love the idea that you're like, I'm willing to have fun, bro. Let's ride this until the wheels fall off. And I think either way, it's still good.
What about the vaccine? We don't have to talk about it. I'm vaccinated personally, so I feel like...
What if I wasn't vaccinated? No, I'm sorry.
I wouldn't mind because I'm vaccinated at this point. But I did choose to get the vaccine more so for... Well, whatever. Like, you know, I was around my parents for a while, and that was my biggest concern during the pandemic because I went back home for a while.
Yeah, no, I get you. I think we all kind of did. We all went back home.
I stayed for 90 days. I stayed through hell months, and then I was like, all right, I'm done. You know, I'm good, you know?
Yeah.
So I went back home just as things started to get better.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good move. I don't think things are wrong. I think it's stupid when people go, wow, you left the city. Well, get out. It's like, no. I did it to make sure I didn't die, stupid. Just because you couldn't do it doesn't mean I'm better or worse. I mean, let me take care of myself and you take care of yourself the way you can and you can't. So there we go.
Yeah.
For me, I did get vaccinated. I guess during the pandemic, I also had a job in the Bronx, which is where I'm staying. Where I was a therapist at an old folks home, so I was helping out.
What type of therapy?
Recreational therapy, just trying to get them back on their feet, just in case they might not be mentally doing well. Maybe they are comatose. Maybe they are doing well, but they're not socially active. Especially because of the pandemic, there was a lot of people that were just like, I don't want to do anything. I just want to see my kids.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, you can't right now because people are dying and we can't have you die, you know? So I kind of took on more of that kind of,
Like mental therapy?
Mental therapy. It was more just making sure they were going to be social too. So it was social therapy, physical therapy if there needed to be some. It was all forms of therapy. And I don't think this is a therapeutic thing, but your age as well, because it was an old folks home. One of the things I didn't even realize that they kind of taught me, you had to ask them if they were like 80 or 90. You had to be like, are you happy with your life?
Yeah.
Which is such a like
weird question.
It's a weird it's weird for us, and we're only 30.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh yeah, I'm cool. I can still do it. I have dreams.
Yeah.
But when you're 90 or 80, you've done it. Are you happy with your life? Ah, I didn't become president, but yes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we had to just make sure that people weren't like suicidal, just mentally ready. But it was fun and an eye-opener for me, because I was like, I didn't realize how much people might have been going through. And it took me outside of comedy. It took me outside of the whole pandemic that was going on, that I had to be more concerned and focused on what these people were doing and needed to do to just make sure that they were happy around this time, too.
Yeah.
So it was fun.
Do you feel like there's any takeaways from that experience that help you in comedy or in entertainment?
Maybe? Oh, there was so much. Old people are miserable.
So you can make fun of that. You're
saying. I could, but I won't. I won't. Yeah. But I remember one of the things I wanted to do is I remember telling the guys, it was girls, grandmas, grandpas. I was telling them that, and transgendered people too. I was telling them that, hey, I do comedy, you guys.
Yeah.
And then one of them goes, that's why you're not funny? I go, that's funny. Because that's the opposite of what you're supposed to say.
Yeah, yeah.
But then we watched some of my friends on TV that were on Comedy Central. And I was like, isn't this good? And I remember his name was, his name was Shepard.
Yeah.
He looked at me in stone face and goes, I guess you had to be there, huh? I go, that's so mean. Hey, they're on stage. They're in front of an audience. The audience is laughing.
Yeah.
And you're like, nah, I guess I had to be there because that's not funny. I mean, I was like, it's such a funny way of looking.
Wow, that's intriguing.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
so
intriguing.
I realized we are funny, and that's what we're working for. I think the first few years of comedy, you're working on your funny. I think during this pandemic, those who were performing during the pandemic were working on their performance. Hopefully the funny is still with you, but now you have to perform for them now. I think there's another step afterwards, because comedy runs in threes. I just don't know what that is, because I'm not there yet. But I do realize, because of the pandemic, I was able to not only go, all right, I know what funny is, but now I got to work on my performance, and that was a thing for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. When we look back, this is my opinion now, sharing just my own thoughts. I think when we look backwards in life, I think it's always good to be living in the moment and pursuing, you know, setting ourselves up for a good future, hopefully.
Yes.
Right? And that's just a personal opinion. But when we look back, it's to, you know, enjoy the good times, think about the good times, but also to learn from the shit, the lessons from, whether you want to call them mistakes or temporary stepping stones or whatever it is. I don't think people want to just sit here and look back. It's very easy to just say, you know what, fuck 2020, I'm wiping it clean. I don't want to look back at all. But I do think it's important to reflect on the lessons. So, like, talking about how much we hated 2020 will probably make someone want to turn off the podcast if we're, like, reveling in, like, the shit.
Yeah.
But, like, those takeaways, though, you know what I mean? I think we can all reflect from time to time, don't need to do it all, but like, how did I grow in 2020, and what lessons can I apply that I did learn that's going to carry me forward into the direction that I want to go, or that I am going, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's my thought.
I agree with that. I don't want this to be mean or too mean, because I think this might sound mean, but I'm not sure.
It's all right.
I think if anybody had a problem with 2020, you had a problem with yourself, because there was nothing you could do. There was nothing to do. If anyone was like, oh, this year is horrible, it's like, make something of the year.
Yeah.
You do nothing for a year. You had nothing to do. You could have done anything to make it fun. I also don't like when people talk about how bad 2020 was, because I go, it couldn't have been that bad if you were there. I'm sorry, this is not going to sound bad, but if I'm on a show and I go, this show is horrible. I'm on the show. How can it be that bad? I'm supposed to be the thing that I'm excited about. Yeah. If the 2020 was bad for you and you literally was like, no, I just fucking suck. No, you didn't have things to do, but that didn't mean it had to be bad. You just had to do things, find things to do.
Yeah.
If you couldn't do anything because everything got canceled because you couldn't do anything, that sounds like a you problem, man. it's so weird to me, but I get where you're coming from. Sorry. Yeah. I completely agree.
Yeah. And you know, that's true for a lot of people. I think there are so many unique situations. You just never know. Some people, you know, lost jobs, family, you know, so there are factors involved that can make it suck.
Even those people, even those people that lost jobs, that's the time where hopefully you go, all right, well, I lost my job. Let me try to work on myself.
Yeah.
Let me try to let me do the thing I always want to do. I have a year to think about what my dream is and how I can do it. Yeah. Let me try.
Yeah.
It's for me, I think it's so, I don't want to say insensitive, but it's so rude of someone to go, my whole year was ruined because the world was shut down. Yeah. You needed people around you to live.
Yeah.
You couldn't do anything on your own. And I'm not even saying be creative. You couldn't just think of, okay, maybe I'll come up with a Zoom. I'll reach out to people on Zoom. Maybe I can play games with friends on weekends. Maybe we have like a party night where we're at. There was a DJ who was famous for a few months because he was like, I'm just going to play music and go live.
Yeah.
And that's what he did. And people started following him and started liking
Mark
him.
Mark Rebellet?
Maybe. I don't know his name. No, he wasn't a comedic one, but I know who that guy is. I know who that guy is now.
That's one of the things that I reconnected with, and I realized that that's going to really help my overall career. It already is incorporating my background in music and incorporating that. Even I made a few music videos, comedic music videos.
That's dope. Put them in the link in here, so I'll look at them.
Okay.
I'll watch them.
Okay, for sure, man. Yeah,
because I genuinely think 2020 didn't have to be your best year because you might have lost your job. Maybe your wife broke up with you. Maybe you got tired of your wife. But this was the one time where as everything was happening, you had time to focus on yourself and try to make something different out of whatever situation you were in.
A lot of people always, you know, the rat race, especially in New York or a place like that where you're constantly busy, and maybe not New York where you're just working all the time, you're busy with family. Yeah. For the first time in most people's lives, or at least in a while, that thing where you're like, oh, I finally had some extra time.
Yeah.
The gift of 2020 was time.
Yeah, so much time. I had a friend who's a drug dealer, and he trained pigeons to carry the drugs for him. That's amazing. Take time out of your day.
Take time to realize.
I love that. Yeah, just play that in the background.
Yeah.
But for me, I go, that's so insane. It's to not do anything at all and just be like, all right, well, I'm just going to be bored for the whole year. Yeah. And I realized that's extreme. I don't think everyone was that way. I think some people was like, all right, I'll find something to do. Yeah. I think at some point you were forced to find something to do.
Yeah.
But it is very weird if people go, oh, I hated 2020 because I had nothing to do. It's do something.
Yeah.
Anything.
Yeah. Well, anything else, Chris?
You know what's weird? I wanted to ask you questions to get your opinion on a lot of things, but I'm feeling that we probably think the same way, and I think it's not because we're both nice. I think it's because we're both reasonable about our time and energy.
Okay.
You said you went to your parents when the pandemic happens. That makes perfect sense. I went to my mom's. It makes perfect sense. Yeah. I found a job. It makes perfect sense. So I'm trying to think, what is something that you might have a weird idea about?
Oh, a weird idea?
Like an unpopular idea. But not that, not that it has to be controversial. It doesn't have to be controversial. It's just, wow, I never thought about it that way.
Well, I think that ideas are... It's hard to answer that general of a question because there's a spectrum of ideas that exist for anything.
Yes.
So, in a way, no matter what your idea is, it's going to be controversial for
someone who doesn't agree with it.
Yeah. So it's hard. I guess, if you have a topic, I could tell you.
Ooh, okay. This is going to be a weird one. Are you ready for it?
Yeah.
You know, it's weird. I didn't look at you. I just kind of looked into the mic.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess what, I guess it's going to be 2022, the Olympics. I guess the Olympics is 2022.
Yeah.
Right now, I think they're accepting transgenders to be a part of it.
Yeah.
And I think right now they have mostly transgendered males, females who were males, participating in female acts.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's controversial because the female athletes are like, well, that's not fair.
Yeah.
They were men at one point. I think if you talk to certain people who agree with
I was
people.
A track athlete, so this is a good question to ask.
Oh, perfect. And I'm a Canadian, yeah.
So I ran in college.
Yeah, okay. And you did football. I mean, how would you feel? I mean, if, you know, you get what I'm going with that.
Yeah,
if a lady's like, I want to tackle you. Ah!
Hey, if and any ladies want to race me, bring it on, first of all. Let me say that.
Take on all challenges.
If a lady wants to... If a human being is born with the female sex parts and she wants to race me, let's fucking do it. Now, should I have the right to cut off my penis or have a surgery that or not? Just do I have the? Is it fair? The question is, would it be fair for me to compete against women? Because I identify as a woman, or that I've decided to, whatever you want to, I don't, you know, there's different identifying, feeling, I don't know, there's probably even words that I'm leaving out, so I want to be all encompassing when I say this. What I do know from the study of human anatomy is that men, or the human male form, right? Not the mind or the internal, but the physical DNA makeup of what a male is. Someone who is born with a penis and testicles, there's higher rates of testosterone in the body. And testosterone dramatically increases the ability to perform physically, right? Females have more estrogen naturally. Again, when I say females, I'm talking about the physiological makeup, the human anatomy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So when you're just talking about human anatomy, to me, it's not fair for me, who was born with more testosterone, to compete on the same level, in my opinion. So be very cut and dry, I don't think it's fair to women that have trained their whole lives to have to be competing against someone who has, through physiological predetermined disposition, is exposed to more testosterone, because essentially that's the same thing as doping. Now, so for someone who hears this, don't say that I'm saying just because someone was a man they're automatically in the same categories. I gotta make it very clear that that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, I don't think it's fair to women.
I get you.
I don't think it's fair to women who have trained their whole lives, and then all of a sudden, this new thing's happening, and they're getting a potential gold medal taken away.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the results of how transgender's performances are when you're putting everyone on a level playing field and categorizing who performs in the men versus women's.
Yeah.
Do you know? Because I haven't.
Yeah, yeah. It's mostly transgendered females, so who were males at one point and turned into females.
Yeah.
I hope I'm getting that right. I'm not
sure. Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
They usually break whatever record that the female had standing.
That's not fair, in my opinion. Yeah. And I'm going to be very clear about that. I'm not even, like, taking an edge. I haven't thought about it much, but it's a great question, and it is a hot topic right now. For me, as a former track athlete, that's not fair.
Yeah.
It's not fair to women. It's not fair to women who have set world records.
Yeah. What do you think is a proper solution? Or if there's a proper solution?
I think there's always going to be an avenue, whether it's been thought of yet or not. And you're asking me questions that I haven't thought of, and so just take that with a grain of salt. Know that I'm answering something that I haven't really pondered on much, because it doesn't affect me personally anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe there's in track and field events, they have the men and then they have the women, right? So there'll be a lineup of events usually at a high school and college track meet that have the men's 800 and the women's 800. Maybe they have transgender 800 in between.
That's
so there's
saying.
Three
competitions
or three heats or whatever you want to call it. I mean, there can be multiple heats per sex, obviously, depending on the track meet and how many people are competing. But But then you would get into, so if there's an LGBTQ or just T, maybe T is the you know, MTW.
Right? Yeah.
If there is a T category, whatever we call that, there's also going to be things needed to be taken into consideration, because it's also women that are transitioning to men. Do they compete in the same races as the men that are transitioning to women? I don't know that. I think that the trans, and maybe there's an option there. So maybe people that are transgender or identify as a different sex, they have the option to compete in that middle race or whenever they do run it, first, second, or third. There's no right or wrong or hierarchy.
Yeah.
But maybe they can, if they were a man transitioning to a woman, maybe they have the option to compete against men also.
Yeah.
And if they're a woman transitioning to man, maybe they can also compete against women.
Okay, yeah, I get that. I get what you're saying.
So that way there's an option for the transgender, but I don't think it's fair to compete against the biological, because of the genetic advantage.
Yeah. I get what you mean.
I don't care if it's controversial or not. To me, and that's my initial thought on the thing. I'm not saying it's right, but I think that's a pretty creative solution. And there may be people out there that are upset saying, well, if I identify as a woman, why can't I compete with women? I mean, it's like, well, not fair to the women.
Yes, yeah. I, everything you said, I agree. I agree with 110%. I knew I was, so I was like, oh, I love this guy. I think even if they do say that, I think, as weird as this might sound, and it's not saying they're on the exact same level, but it was just acknowledging that this has happened, that there is a special league. You know what I mean? There is a Special Olympics.
Yeah.
So that means everyone on the Special Olympics are going, and then we have this Olympics, and we can also have within this Olympics the transgendered section where they are. And that doesn't mean they are, they deserve to be in a special league or whatever like that.
And that is creating equality. They're getting to compete at the same event in the same time frame with everybody else.
Yeah.
It's just... If we want to make it fair, we can't make it unfair for others.
Yes.
So, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not fair in pursuing fairness. You don't just rearrange things around and make it unfair for someone else. It's like...
Yeah.
That's a whole other thing, too, because you can apply that. But it's like, when we're pursuing equality and fairness and all these things, like, the solution is not to just transfer the fairness. You know, it's like, no. Like, you can't just make it unfair for someone else all of a sudden and call that fairness.
Yeah.
That's not shitty job repairing the problem here. You don't just move papers around and be like, oh, the problem's fixed.
Yes, yeah, I agree.
You know, we got to create fairness for everybody, you know? So I
agree with that. I think you put it perfectly. I think that's... listening to how you explained it, I've learned a little bit too. I'm like, all right, cool. Because you are a very wonderful, genuine, nice person. So asking you a question that might be unpopular.
Controversial. Yeah.
I think it was cool to hear how you're willing to handle it. Because at the same time, I don't think you said anything offensive. I mean, we'll find out after this. But it didn't sound like you said anything offensive. It sounded like you were trying to cater to every single individual.
Yeah.
And you didn't want anyone to feel left out. Right. And I think that is how we should move as humans.
Thank you.
No, thank you. Because you are the epitome of what a perfect specimen is, sir. And I think the sad thing is, I think a lot of people in this generation are willing to do exactly what you said, in the sense of they'll go, oh no, it wasn't fair for them, so let's make it fair for them, and let's take away the fairness for those who had it fair, because it's not helping the situation.
It gets very deep, because that can be applied very quickly to all kinds.
Oh, it is. It is applied to a lot of things. I think there was a politician who was like, let's make laws for men on their bodies because they made laws on women's in their bodies. And I was like, I get what you're doing.
It's called vengeance. There's a difference between vengeance versus good, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And there's a very clear difference. In my opinion. And I'm not...
No, and it's fine. I enjoy you and I get it.
Vengeance is different than good.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And you know what? I feel like this is going to start potentially It's very
rocking
easy.
Rocking some cradle? Okay.
Sorry. No, I'm saying, like, this could... I mean, I feel like, you know, 2020 was a big year on racial everything, right? I don't mean to take it here if we don't want to.
Oh, no, we can take it. We can take it here, you know.
I don't know. We can shut it off right now.
I'm done with this! Turn off the mic! No.
I feel like that's, like, an important thing, though, right?
Yeah, it's...
Do you want me to just...
No, you can keep it going. I think it's... How do I want to say this? Ooh, you know this saying that people say where they go, old habits die hard? Let's look at that in the sense of Americans treating people of color differently. It's an old habit, and it's dying very hard. And I think we have, people of color have somewhat of a platform to speak out. But I even think then it's being filtered what we get to say and what's heard.
Who's filtering?
I think
where does that filter?
I think the masses filter what we want to hear. As in, we select what we like and what we don't like.
The masses do.
Yeah, okay. The masses. Okay. Because I think if you were to talk to someone about reparations for Black people, I think Black people are like, yeah, I think we deserve it, you know. And I think there'll be some Hispanics, some Puerto Ricans, some Asians who go, won't just work harder. Or, yeah, they do deserve it. We put them through so much. And I think because of that, everyone's listening to what sounds the best rather than what might be the best for whatever the situation is. Realistically, how do you give Black people now their reparations? $300 doesn't match what it used to match in the past. $1,000 isn't helping. We're learning that because of this pandemic. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of things.
Throwing money at something,
yeah,
is... I'm not saying... I'm not making a blanket statement.
No, you're fine.
Let's separate this from race for one second, or reparations, and just say throwing money at something, at any problem,
yeah,
is not... It's usually not the right way to fix whatever... There's definitely things that need fixing.
Yeah.
There's things that need to be completely... playing field being leveled. All kinds of equity.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know exactly how, but I do know that... and I'm not saying I'm against reparations. I didn't say that.
Yeah, no worries.
But the idea of just thinking that, you know, here's a check, right?
Like,
you know... There's something much more to it than that, you know?
The only way money would resolve anything is if we took all of Jeff Bezos' money and we just had his money, like Black people just had his money, then we'll be fine. Because that, we wouldn't care anymore. We wouldn't even care about racism. We would just buy our states and be like, this is it. I don't give a fuck, you know? But money wouldn't solve the problem because there are systematical things that are in play.
And I think money also doesn't solve the problem for rich people either.
Like, yeah, it definitely doesn't.
Like,
yeah.
We talked about chasing.
Anthony
earlier.
Bourdain killed himself, yeah.
We talked about chasing, right?
Yeah.
Following, fame, money. You know, you mentioned, I think you even specifically said the idea of chasing money doesn't lead to, you know. So I think that that's something that we all need, regardless of the issue, it is a true statement. I think money is important in this world.
Money is
a part of the world we live in.
Yes.
There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
You know, we need it to buy food. We need it to live, to have a roof over our head, to get around, you know.
Yeah.
There's something more to it than just money. Money is an illusion of... the hierarchy of what's most important in life.
Exactly. Yeah.
But there are disparities that need to be addressed in the best way possible.
Yeah.
Whatever. I don't know. Yeah. You know, I don't know the solution. I'm not running for president right now.
Yeah, no worries.
Next year,
yeah.
But I do have... I mean, do you want to hear... I do think that there is a... if someone was like, where do you sit in the political spectrum?
Mm-hmm.
I would say, and you asked me, you told me you wanted to hear my opinion.
Yes, yeah, this is perfect, yeah.
So, and this is such an important topic. I believe in two things. I believe in equity. I believe that people are, there's no doubt about it, not just in the United States, but in the entire world, that there is a different brackets of income that you're born into. Right. And that's not just that, look, taking race out of the equation, right?
Yeah.
Look at India. It's the disparity in poverty and the amount of poverty in India is insane.
Yeah, yeah, right? Yeah. We look at Appalachian Mountains. Yeah.
In America, what I love about America, well, to me, America is an idea.
Yep.
That we have to try and live up to the greatest potential that exists there. There is a form of responsibility that I think each one of us has to take as an individual, being the change you want to see, whatever you want to call it, in making America great again, which I hate that.
That is
a buzzword, but in an opposite way.
Yeah.
Because I don't agree with that person. I am not a fan.
Yeah. No, I get you.
No, that was, I don't know why. Better than ever, because we were never great. Yeah. We were never... Yeah. We were great in some ways, and we were terrible in other ways.
Yeah.
So, I'm going to make America fucking the best that it can be, right? Yeah. Like, am I getting too... I'm starting to get a little passionate, I guess.
No, I like it. I can see the American flag behind you. This is nice.
So, make America greater than it's ever been. Not great again, because guess what, motherfuckers? Like, we had some serious problems.
Yeah.
Right? We had some original sins that cannot be ignored or just glossed over or just swept under the rug, right?
Yeah.
And we need to create more equity in the way that we have to level the playing field without taking away from the opportunity to work your ass off.
Yeah.
To be the best that you can be. As an individual, no matter where you're from.
Yeah.
So there has to be this blend, in my opinion, there has to be this blend of realizing, yes, like, I'm not just going to be a fucking asshole and ignore people who have been at a seared disadvantage to me.
Yeah.
Like, I need to acknowledge that, and I need to do something about that. We, as a whole, me, everyone, you know, like, that needs to be addressed and fixed. So that, you know, someone who's standing on a very low platform over here has the same chance to work their ass off and have the opportunity to navigate through their circumstances if they're willing to do the things to get to that point, right?
Mm-hmm.
And someone who's here, you know what I mean? Like, there has to be a better way to either show the path, to have the path be... You know, but what we can't do is just remove the opportunity altogether to work your ass off to be somebody.
Yeah, yeah.
Am I articulating that in a way?
Yeah, you articulate it very well. I understand what you mean. Yeah. I think that's a beautiful philosophy to have, and I think there's nothing wrong with that train of thinking. I think that's a good way of thinking about it. I will agree to that. I will also say that also maybe that we should live in a culture where if you fail, it's fine. I think if you want to work your ass off, work your ass off. And if you don't want to work your ass off, you should just be able to be fine so that everyone's fine. And those who decide to work their ass off, and they do very well, and God forbid if someone ever scams them or takes some kind of money from them, that makes them not bankrupt, but back to being fine again. You know what I mean? So that way you can still
be... What you're saying is you want... We'll use a bowling analogy. You want bumpers on the sides. You want to still be able to hit a strike,
yes.
But you want bumpers on the sides that say you can't... Get a gutter ball.
Yes, yeah. Because I think the philosophy of going, we have to work hard, we have to pull ourselves up by our own bootstraps, is a very good philosophy that would be true if we lived in a fair world. But because we know the world is not fair anymore, I think that's what we're doing. I think we're opening the idea that the world isn't fair, that no matter how hard you might work, you might not get to the big step that you want because someone else might have a father who works there or have a family member who works there. And you might get somewhere else, but then also in that location that you're like, oh, well, I'll just go here. Someone goes, oh, yeah, but I'm already here. So I think to make it better for everyone, because society isn't fair, is to go, all right, we'll just make sure that no matter what happens, the worst you can go is just ground level. You don't go rock bottom.
What I don't like is seeing homeless people.
I don't like that.
So I think what you're saying is basically put a system in place where you,
there's no homeless people.
There's not homeless
people. And that's super easy to do. For me, I go, that it's such an easy move to make that I'm kind of angry that our society goes, I'm only willing to do anything that can benefit me. And that bothers me.
It bothers me as well to have that be... Yeah. I think I understand what you said there, and if I understood it properly, I do agree with it.
A good way, or a good analogy, at least I'll try it, and if it doesn't work, sorry, is that bagel spots, they throw away the bagels every day.
Yeah.
And
why not let people that need it, why let something just rot in the trash when it could be benefited by someone who needs it.
Who needs to eat it,
100%. I hate seeing food go to waste, man. I hate, especially, like, perishables, like poultries and fish and things like that. It's like, like, you're also letting an animal go to waste, motherfucker. Excuse my language.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Like, Scott understands. It's fine. But, yeah.
A
god? Because of cross? Yeah. So, like, I agree to that. And I think we can all look at that and we go, yeah, why not just give it to them? And then what the sad part is, the other side, the corporation side, goes, well, they can sue us now if we do that. We can get in trouble.
Stupid. Then fix that.
Yeah. You know, it's like, literally like, just... And then...
Change the legal...
Yes.
You know, to not have someone making fear-based decisions like that.
Yes. Literally what it has to be. And I know it'll take time, but I think if we all try to move in that direction, maybe it can happen faster.
Yeah.
If everyone's looking out for themselves. Yeah. And I think... And I could be wrong. Tell me if I'm wrong about you on this one. I think that's why you are so pleasant to be around. I think that's why you're such a good person.
What's the reason?
Because you see how chaotic this world is.
Yeah.
You see how messed up it is.
Every time I see a homeless person, there's a part of my soul that I don't know exactly what happens, but I feel it. Like, it's whether it's like it gets pinched a little bit, or there's like a just a little bit of a thing where it's this discomfort, like something's wrong.
Yeah.
There's a signal in my brain that goes off and says, this world, there's something wrong.
Yeah.
You know? And I don't even fully know how to... One of the things that really bothers me is I don't know how to, like, truly help. Because I don't know sometimes... I feel this internal conflict. Like, it's like, I want... You know... I feel different conflicts internally, and it's hard to even say what all those things are. Sometimes when I try to help, and I might say something like, "Hey, can I grab you a sandwich?" You know, something like that. Because again, the idea of throwing money at a problem, it takes us back to that.
Here we go. Yeah, exactly.
You know, I'm afraid if I give that homeless person a few dollars, there's a few reasons that. Michael Jordan has a stance on this, and I think I talked about it in a podcast previously, but he's actually he has a conservative response on the homeless thing.
Yeah, love
and I'm not saying that's good or bad, but what I don't want to happen is a few things. One, I don't want them to just take that money and not buy food. It's something that's like the most important, water, food, hydration, something that's going to catapult them forward to help better themselves.
Yeah.
Maybe they mask their problems and they see it as inevitable, so they just want to like cover it with things that are bad for them. Whatever it may be. So I'm afraid of that happening. And I also am afraid of enabling that lifestyle. Like some of the man, we're really getting deep, so this is really gonna cut. Like
No worries. Like, we're fine. I'm fine with it as long as you're fine with it.
I am.
Yeah.
I'm afraid sometimes that if I do give money to in that situation, that it might enable the first behavior that I talked about, but also the habit of asking for money. And let me just hear me out on this. The amount of energy. I'm similar to Michael Jordan on this one. The idea of standing on the corner all day asking for money that every single person walks by, there's a similar amount of energy that you could apply toward getting a job. And I'm not saying everyone is employable and they're not always like good jobs.
Yeah,
and,
I get you.
But it's like by giving that person money that one time, it's kind of like reinforcing that high or giving them a spot, essentially, mm-hmm. like, as a comedian,
yeah.
right?
I get what you're saying, yeah.
It's enabling that, like, it's like, well, if I do this, the numbers show that if I keep
this
doing
this is as successful as this, working, yeah.
Yeah, so that's part of, I want to help, right?
Yeah.
I don't know the right way to help
yeah.
at those times, but that's why that I feel this inner conflict, because I sense that something is wrong. I recognize it.
Yeah.
I don't know what the best way, and I feel kind of like put on the spot to have the solution when I don't have it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
I get that. Yeah. I hope this doesn't sound narcissistic of me, but because of how nice you are, maybe this might help out as much as it helps out me. What I try to do is I go, I have to make it. And I put the pressure on myself to make it. Because there are so many ideas that I have that I think can help situations like that. That can help out so many other people that aren't only just homeless, but just living impoverished lifestyles. That I go, I need to make it because I have so much to offer. And because of that, it makes me want to be funnier. It makes me want to write yes. better. It makes me want to have a great time when I'm on stage because I'm doing it for something. And that, and I'll,
I feel
I'm not,
that way too, man.
Yeah, if that's how you feel. And my friend said it, and it was perfect. Julissa Contreras, if you get a chance, she's an off-Broadway writer. She's very hilarious. She's probably going to be a Broadway writer soon. But one of the things she said, she goes, when there's a fire, the first thing you have to do is check on yourself. Get out.
Yeah.
And then look around and see who you have to save.
Yeah.
If there's a fire and the first thing you're thinking is, all right, well, I'm going to just grab my fucking phone, my bag, let me get, and then, oh, my mom's here. Oh. Mm-mm.
Too late.
Yeah. If you see your mom there, how are you okay? Okay, come with me. I'm this way. And try to see if you can take her. You know what I mean? Try to make sure that you're okay before you can try to fix someone else. Yeah. I think I'm at a position where I'm doing a little bit better than people who live on the street, but I'm not that far away from still being on the street.
Okay.
So I have to go, all right, well, how do I fix my situation? And then I can go, all right, I fixed my situation. My situation's fixed. Now I can help him out. Now I can help her out. I'm out of this fire. I'm good.
Yeah.
Now I can go in and rescue some people. You know, same thing for fucking when your plane's about to crash. The mask. Put it on yourself, then put it on them. You know what I mean? You want to make sure that you have yourself handled.
You know what's
before
interesting
you.
Is my dad taught me that lesson.
Yeah, it makes perfect
same,
sense, bro.
Same lesson.
Yeah. A homeless person goes, hey, can I get a dollar? And I give him a dollar. Another homeless person, hey, can I get a dollar? I give him a dollar. Another homeless person, hey, can I get a dollar?
And
I'm like, I'm out of dollars. Yeah, yeah. So I can't offer them that. I think it's also a good response to saying, throwing money at the problem won't solve the problem. You're right. It might enable them to want to do to keep on, all right, I'll just keep on asking for money.
Yeah.
Instead of doing that, I'll go, I'm going to make it. I'll be back.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's the same people. But if there's not, at least I have something in my head to solve that problem.
Yeah.
And then I'll be at a platform where I can try to.
Yeah.
And I do think maybe that is a little bit of a God complex. But it is a thing where I want to try to fix the world. And maybe that's not a bad thing.
No, it's not. And I don't... I wouldn't even apply the term God complex to it because that sound, I think...
Yeah, narcissistic.
Well, yeah, it makes it sound like what your intention to do good is a bad thing. You know what I mean? And it's not. It's actually something that should be reinforced and rewarded and given water to. So I give you metaphorical water to that, and it's part of my motivation as well. It's one of the things I want to do is make this world a better place. However I can, you know, along the journey as I... You know, if I got little bits in my canteen here and there, hey, take a drink, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like, I don't want to wait 100% until, you know, but...
But
without, like, I'm not going to, like, disable my journey in life to deplete my resources now. That's some serious stuff to contemplate, guys. I love how we ended there. We talked about, you know, part of what fuels our journey and what's important to us. Including, you know, you know, we'll just leave it open-ended. There's a lot of things that can be done to make this world a better place, but that is definitely a motivating factor for both of us. Chris, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Oh, Michael, thank you for having me, man. This is really fun. I really had a good time. This is dope. If you guys liked anything you heard from me, follow me on Instagram, Hamilton_4Mayor, okay?
Yeah.
I will be having other things up, but if you want to know how they're going to happen, just follow me on Instagram. That's what I'm doing. I'm not doing a website. I'm just going to do that. And let's see how it goes.
And I'm going to say it one more time because people sometimes need to hear something twice in order to be able to write it down. So I'm actually going to spell it out for you.
Oh, it's, you got it.
At Hamilton4Mayor. It's
underscore.
Four. Yeah. So at Hamilton underscore the letter four. Or the number four.
I do that too. I say the letter, but that makes, yeah.
The number four, not F-O-U-R, but the number four. And then Mayor, M-A-Y-O-R. Yes. Oh, are you are you trying to become Mayor?
I am. I'm going to get into it. I should have done it this year.
Okay, so we
saw what happened.
We talked about some stuff that, you know, partially overlaps with that there toward the end of the podcast.
Exactly, so. Exactly. That's my plan. Hopefully they don't listen to that titty story, but yes.
Or maybe they'll appreciate the authenticity and it'll help, you know?
Yeah,
so,
yeah. I want to say authenticity. Sorry, I don't know why I did that.
Good, no, it's good to end on, it's good to end on a giggle. Thanks, guys. Thanks for tuning in this week, and God bless.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. Thank you for listening. By the way, am I the only one who's horny?